Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show improve. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
The discussions are happening in boardrooms and by water coolers as companies, including NPR, oust executives accused of sexual harassment. Many are rethinking how complaints are handled. One question is whether human resources departments are willing or able to do the job. NPR's Tovia Smith reports.
Sophia Dean was 25 years old, working a dream job, cooking in a fancy restaurant, when she says a coworker started harassing her.
He would corner me and, like, grab my arm, and he was just insisting over and over again that he was in love with me and that he...
Dean didn't want to report it to her human resources department. She feared they'd see her as the problem.
I was worried they'd rather move someone away who's whistleblowing, like, don't want any scandal, don't want any issues, don't want anything. So I was worried that I would be the one punished.
Eventually, the harassment got so bad she did go to HR, but she says they basically told her to ignore it.
You know, we're sorry that that happened to you, but, you know, that's the way that kitchens can be.
A month later, Dean quit and got a new job, only to experience similar harassment there, and she says the exact same response from HR.
To me, it confirmed that they would much rather sweep it under the rug. And I felt like they were for the company rather than for the employees.
She is hardly alone in her misgivings. Just about a quarter of employees who experience sexual harassment report it, according to the federal government. And even some who've worked in human resources, like HR consultant Cynthia Shapiro, say employees are right to be wary.
HR people are taught to smile and say, oh, yes, you've done the right thing and you should come to us and we're going to investigate this. And it sounds like the company's on your side, but it's not always the case.
Shapiro says HR has an inherent conflict. Their job is to protect the company, she says, not the employee.
They will help you as long as your interests don't run counter to the interests of the company, because you're not paying their salary. The company is. And there are many HR departments that operate under an edict to shut you down in order to protect the company.
It comes down to a cold calculus, Shapiro says. A firm might keep some star employees despite alleged misconduct as long as their value outweighs their risk. But that cost-benefit analysis is quickly changing.
You know, it's a new day. You know, the exposure, the damage to your corporate brand is immeasurable. We can't afford to ignore it.
HR consultant Lisa Brown Alexander says companies that didn't get it before do now. But she says reports of the evil HR lady, as she puts it, are exaggerated. She says most HR professionals see themselves as having dual loyalties to the company and the employee.
I don't know any HR people who would just turn a blind eye. Anyone worth their weight in salt knows that they have an ethical and professional obligation to conduct an objective, efficient investigation.
Still, Alexander concedes outsourcing HR to an independent third party is a cleaner model. In the same way, hiring an outside law firm to investigate complaints can boost trust in the process. But National Women's Law Center President Fatima Goss-Graves cautions outsourcing can create issues of its own.
I think the idea of just abandoning HR departments as the place to go, I think that, you know, that's too easy of an answer. We don't want to let employers off the hook to really make their HR places welcoming places.
Another kind of hybrid model leaves HR in charge, but puts an independent outside counselor in the employee's corner. Toby Hervey, CEO of one such service called Bravely, says many who've used it wouldn't have otherwise gone to HR.
We offer an alternative starting point that's totally confidential, totally safe, because it all lives outside the walls of the company. And we try to be that objective source of truth and a neutral perspective on what the company policies are.
Hervey says many companies actually foot the bill for the service, hoping it helps with employee retention and helps nip problems in the bud. Another option for employees frustrated with HR is to file a complaint with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Traffic to the agency's website spiked up to eightfold recently, but the EEOC is chronically backlogged, and it's not an option for independent contractors, like actresses, who also don't have HR departments. It's one reason many are opting for a more direct way to get through to the C-suite.
We all have megaphones right now, and we can take some power back.
HR consultant Lori Rudiman says women have got the message that many companies only oust longtime perpetrators after they're publicly outed.
I know a lot of people are really skeptical of the Me Too movement right now, but the power in that is that it hopefully encourages another individual to be brave, and then that can snowball in a positive way.
Employees are also posting anonymously on websites like Glassdoor.com, a job search site that includes company reviews. One, for example, says sexual assault is rampant and HR doesn't care. Wharton School professor Peter Capelli says it's an effective way to hold companies accountable and to warn other employees, as long as it doesn't skid out into a kind of vigilante justice that tramples the rights of the accused.
You know, there are a lot of people who are wrongly accused, and a system that can damage people's reputations just based on being accused would be troublesome.
But Capelli says outing the companies who are not taking allegations seriously does make sense, especially when complaints are getting nowhere with HR. Tovia Smith, NPR News.
Like brother hell.
There are some employment contracts that make it difficult for harassment victims to find out about one another and make claims together. Many people sign these clauses without knowing it. NPR's Yuki Noguchi has been looking into this.
When former Fox News anchor Gretchen Carlson came forward and accused her boss, the late Roger Ailes, of sexual harassment, she did so in spite of a clause in her employment agreement requiring her to resolve workplace complaints through private arbitration. Emily Martin, who is general counsel at the National Women's Law Center, says Carlson found a way around that by suing Ailes personally in court.
She and her attorney found a creative theory around her arbitration agreement so that she could make her story public. And obviously that led to a lot more dominoes falling.
Her coworkers might never have come forward, Martin says, had Carlson not had the will, resources, and high profile to take her case public. Carlson's case is unique in many ways, but Martin says it lays bare why contracts that require individual arbitration are such a problem.
If an arbitration agreement and its related confidentiality provisions had been enforced, it would not come to light.
Workers' rights advocates worry that will happen if the Supreme Court sides with employers, as many legal experts believe is likely. The three cases before the court ask whether a worker has a fundamental right to face arbitration with other workers, or if that right can be waived when workers sign employment agreements. What the court decides could affect any workplace claim, wage disputes, discrimination, as well as harassment. The cases do not address issues of confidentiality and arbitration, but workers' rights advocate Catherine Ruckelshaus, the general counsel of the National Employment Law Project, says that issue is closely related.
The problem with private arbitration, especially when you have to go it alone, is that you cannot share information, facts that you would otherwise get in a discovery of a regular case.
She says recent cases highlight how perpetrators often continue their behavior when victims are kept in silos.
If you lose the ability to show the pattern and practice, then the patterns and practices are going to continue.
Employment arbitration agreements are increasingly popular as employers try to keep cases out of court. It's estimated between 30 to 60 million American workers have signed one.
I am sure that many of your listeners have signed class action waivers without knowing it.
David Lopez is former general counsel for the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. I reached him at a restaurant. He says recent stories show how collective action might have stopped problems sooner.
The women who suffered subsequently would not have suffered. You would have been able to address those issues out of the box instead of to bottle it up confidentially and allow it to happen time and time again.
Employers argue they have no interest in aiding and abetting bad behavior. Christopher Murray is an Indianapolis attorney representing management.
I disagree with the idea that a lot of employers have any interest in silencing. I don't see that as a mission of a typical employer. The values of arbitration are the ability to get a quicker decision and overall maybe a cheaper way to litigate disputes than you might have in court.
Wendy McGuire Coates, another management attorney, says most arbitration agreements still leave room for victims to speak out or hire the same attorney.
The arbitration agreements don't keep people from saying to other people around them that they have a complaint or coming forward to HR and complaining.
Coates says sexual harassment claims are often ill-suited for collective action anyway because they often involve different evidence and circumstances. The Supreme Court's decision is expected by the summer. With President Trump's appointee Neil Gorsuch on the bench, most legal experts expect the court to uphold individual arbitration agreements. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News, Washington.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, November 16th, 2017. So I have been told this is our weekly Thursday broadcast on neutralizing workplace racism. If we have any non-white listeners, you have figured out I never get any sort of unwanted touching, sexual abuse, sexual harassment. I don't have any of that. I don't get cajoled into going to the holiday parties. I don't have any problems getting my raises, promotions, if I need a transfer, if I need a sick day, if I need vacation time. I don't have any of those problems. I go in, I do my job, I put my feet up on the desk when I feel like it. Looks like I'm going to be cruising for the next 15, 20 years or whenever I feel like retiring. If you are in that wonderful position, you should be one of the first folks to dial in and give us details, specifics on how other black people can replicate your quote unquote success in the workplace. We need that sort of input immediately. The number 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *6. If you would like to participate. The segments that we started with at the beginning of the program from NPR, where they were talking about different developments with regards to all of the reports of sexual harassment and what that means in the workplace moving forward to try and solve some of these problems. So we don't every other day have a new report of someone accusing a coworker of having done something or said something or combination and saying the Supreme Court case that's going to be coming up and looking at how human resources is involved in these cases. I feel like I've heard that before about human resources and the EEOC, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, them being impotent, ineffective, unable to solve these problems. I feel like I've heard that before. Human resources perhaps not being about solving these problems and just defending the company from any sort of litigation or wrongdoing. I feel like I've heard that before and being unresponsive to an issue, not sexual harassment, though. Certainly, if we have listeners who have some sort of a problem, any sort of a problem in the workplace, and you want to get codified counter-racist suggestions with regards to how you should think about and move forward to try to solve that problem, certainly dial in and we'll do our best to offer input on how you might want to go about dealing with the situation. The number again, 641-715-3640. 540, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I'll encourage listeners again, this broadcast is not for spectators. If you are tuning in just to hear what the black people are talking about, griping about this week, that is not what this program is for. They have much better entertainment options on Thursday night. Much, much better. If we have folks that are listening, there is no way, if a system of white supremacy does exist, which I've concluded it does, there is no way that you can have non-white people, black people who are not having problems on the job, not seeing things happening on the job. That is simply not possible. If we have a wealth of listeners who are not experiencing any issues on the job, they're not seeing anything worthy of reporting, wonderful. Make sure you invest in the program if you're in that position. And you should still be calling in to let us know how you were able to do that, how you were able to get your work situation so comfortable where you could just be in a position of homeostasis and have no attacks to worry about and just worrying about, you know, whatever you're going to do when you get ready to take your vacation days. That's it. A few other things I wanted to make sure I touched on before moving forward. We have talked about that consistently, about the EEOC, human resources, in terms of if they're going to be there as a resource to help you, or are they just going to be there to help the racists who are abusing and mistreating you on the job? We've already talked about that. I would still say you can go and ask questions because they can, a lot of times, give you constructive information. I would just view them as, these are not necessarily people that I'm going to look at as my allies. These are not my friends. I'm certainly not going to think about anything that I say to these people as being confidential. If anything, when I talk to them, you definitely want to make sure I'm asking questions. I'm asking questions. I'm asking questions. And I've thought about what questions I want to ask, what I want to say, what I'm not going to say when I'm talking with the folks down at HR, whether they are white or non-white employees. Continuing, if you have commentary, I know we have folks who, for whatever reason, are not able or do not want to dial in to share any of their thoughts or suggestions, you can drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com, and we will share your commentary on the air. We had a few folks who wrote in. In fact, before I even get to some of the folks who wrote in, the holiday season has started, so those office parties are going to start rolling out pretty much from now to the end of the year. If we have any folks who have experiences with those office parties, if you are required to attend, I know sometimes they have them actually during work hours. So, you know, you're on the clock. So that's a part of your work for the day, is to come and hang out at the office party. Sometimes they have them after hours, but you're still required to attend, or somehow they, as I said, cajole you into, oh, you got to come. You're not a team player if you don't, you know, come out and have a few drinks with us, or whatever they're doing for the holiday. I was speaking with some of the listeners off air, and some folks, the invitations and the holiday parties, all that nonsense is starting already. And I had one listener in particular. She was saying that folks on the job, she's been there for a while. They had this Christmas party last year and they're doing it again. I think they're doing it like the first week in December. So they already sending out the invitations. It's going to be at 7 o'clock and they're going to this establishment. It's going to be alcohol and all that other stuff. She already has her code together. She's in one of those places where it's not mandatory that you go, but they give you the stink eye and everything else if you, you know, act like you're not going to attend. And I've said, for folks that are in that situation, fine, no problem. You just look at that as part of the job. I have a code for that too. If it starts at 7, I'm going to be there at 7 o'clock, and once 7:30 hits, I will feel free to leave at any time once 7:30 hits. If that's 7:45, 7:40, 7:31, anytime in that window, I am out of here. And I've even suggested you can preempt in case anybody starts looking at you crazy, like, oh my God, you just got here. We've only been here a short period of time and we got our tequila shot set up and ready to roll and got a few lines we're going to snort. Whoa, whoa. It looks grand, Bob. It looks grand, Helen. I'm sure you all are going to have a lot of fun, but we already had an engagement schedule. We got a lot of things on our itinerary for Friday evening. You know me, I like to cut loose. already had something to do. I wanted to drive by. That's why I got here early, so that I could frolic and have as much fun as I could, you know, for the first 45 minutes, 30 minutes. But got to be rolling. I'm sure you all will have a good time without us, and we'll see you on Monday. Take care. Already got it codified. And of course, you're going to be sober if you are at this event. If you can bring somebody with you, that's great, because we've had people who have reported the hijinks can get real out of control. Anytime you have white people, alcohol, and they're not on the job, it can get real bad. So it can be nice to have another person with you who is also sober, just to, you know, keep an eye out and make sure nobody comes for any unwanted touching or solicitation of any sort. Can be very helpful. But it was great to hear listeners who already being having to deal with that sort of thing, and they already have their holiday counter racist code and are implementing it flawlessly. Folks who wrote in specifically and had other issues, things that they wanted to address. Let's see. First up, we had one person who wrote in, who was talking about wardrobe. This is something that's popped up on the job before. I think Mr. Ken Steele has talked about this, where they did not have the most specific wardrobe policy on the job, but seemed like his employees were just white employees were exclusively targeting him for the type of pants that he was wearing. And so he made adjustments to solve that problem. We had another person who wrote in last week. She said that she gets dirty looks from the white employees, coworkers, for wearing sweatpants on the job. I think Mr. Steele's issue revolved around sweatpants as well. I would look at the policy and procedure. That's something I talk about all the time. That should be explicit. If there's any sort of concern or question about, you know, what a person is wearing, immediate, as a, before we get to the gossiping and, oh man, Johnny, did you see what he had on and all that? Wait a minute. What's in the policy and procedure? Let's see if this is actual a violation of what we're supposed to be wearing, or if this is just I don't particularly care for your particular, you know, decor, what you have in your closet. Check the policy and procedure. If it says you can't wear sweatpants, or if it says, you know, what they want you to wear, I would say go ahead and make that adjustment, because it's been my experience that whites can make a lot of trouble for you on that sort of thing. If it's not in violation of policy and procedure, I wouldn't say a word until somebody came to me and, you know, acted like it was a problem. Oh, is this in violation of our policy? Did I miss something? Because I think I checked, and on page 13, it doesn't seem to say anything about sweatpants. Did I misinterpret? Still in the question lane? Get them to answer. And I would even say you should also, if you go that route with policy and procedure, I have seen where white people can immediately go and change policy and procedure, then say, oh yeah, we just changed it this morning, and with the new update, no sweatpants. So take that. That can happen too. You have to be prepared for that. If it does, oh well, you just scratch the sweatpants and figure out something else to wear. Next thing. Person wrote in and missed one. Okay, here we go. One thing I've noticed is wearing company paraphernalia while at work has an impact on how suspected white supremacists view you. I don't recommend spending your own money on these items, but if you can obtain shirts, sweaters, hats, etc. for free, you should take them and wear them while at work. I have taken Neely Fuller Jr.'s approach of portraying the attitude that if someone is preventing me from succeeding, they are preventing the company from succeeding. I think he was talking about that at the audio we started with today. By doing this, I have seen the reaction of coworkers' faces when they see me in company gear. Some seem happy that I am branding myself with company clothing, while others who would completely ignore me now seem curious to ask if I've spent my own money on these items and make continuous comments on how much swag I have with all the company paraphernalia I wear. To my opinion, they seem bothered that I've acquired these items without paying and am aligning myself with the company visually. I also recommend wearing company clothing often, because suspected white supremacists on the job like to see what brands you are wearing and speculate on how much money you are spending on them. I advise the callers, listeners, not to spend time talking about how you use your money to suspected white supremacists on the job as well. Great suggestions. That is fascinating, especially the wearing whatever brand or company paraphernalia you have, I guess, depending on where you work at, how much of that sort of stuff that they have. But that is a great way. I am not an outsider. I am a part of the company. Someone who is not doing the correct thing with regards to me, you are not just violating me. You are violating the company. You are harming the company's success. Great job. Great recommendation from Mr. Full. I think he said that today. Never say that someone is against you. They are against the company. If they're doing things to foul you up and make sure you don't get correct information and that sort of thing, they are sabotaging the company. See, I'll share. See if I can get in one more. Lots of suggestions. See if I can get in this last one. I'll see if I can get this one in. It's a little longer. Caller from California. Thank you all who participate every week, and thank you so much for the wisdom and guidance. I've gained a lot of Black self-respect listening to the podcast for a year. Unfortunately, I was just forced to quit my job because my boss found my activist page thanks to the help of one of my coworkers. Woo! We've talked about this a lot in terms of both aspects of it, the social media aspect and other coworkers. I don't know if this was a Black coworker or a white coworker, but I've said consistently, you know, anything that you share with another person on the job, I recommend thinking, hey, am I comfortable sharing this with every single person from the janitor to the CEO who works here? If I'm not, I'm not going to share it with this person unless this is a Black person. This is a non-white person that I have known. We have a rapport, and I trust this person like, wow. If that is not the case, no, I'm not sharing anything, not talking about racism, certainly nothing, because this sort of thing has happened before with Cal's listeners. And the social media, certainly talked about that before. You definitely want to be careful about who has access to any of your social media activities or activist work that you do. Be real careful about that. Can cause problems. Continuing. Below, I've listed all the racism that I have endured in my work environment over the part of 3 months. Number one, it was my first day working as a professional server for weddings, private events. There was only one other non-white person there. As we were walking by, our boss, a white woman who was standing next to the venue owner, another white woman, she says to us, "Get to work." We were already hustling in the middle of completing tasks. Number two, I was told that I would be assisting a white female at the bar. When I got to the bar to introduce myself, she was standoffish and had an attitude with me, but no one else. A guest came up and ordered a beer. As I'm pouring from the keg, she says, "Yep, that's good." I respond, smiling, "Yep, I know." Number three, I was setting up the tables and the owner of the venue was standing about 5 feet away next to the coordinator. They seemed to be observing not only the area, but me. The owner says, "It's looking good now. All we have to do is get those tables finished." Without even looking up at her, I say, "They'll be finished in a minute." She retorts, "Oh, I wasn't rushing you. I was just..." Insert buckets of words. I still didn't look up at her. I just continued setting the tables. Number four, one of the guests at the wedding came up to the bar and started saying in my direction, "For shizzle, nizzle, bizzle." You get the idea. When I was crouched down pouring his beer, it made me uncomfortable, so I didn't say anything. If I can do it differently, I would have asked him to stop or forget about being served anymore. I'm just stopping here. This is one we've encountered a lot, where white people come up to you on the job. They come up to a Black person and they start going into their stereotypical Negro dialect act. We've had a lot of these, whether they, "Yo, homie, what's good and what's crack?" Talked about this a lot. We've given out suggestions on dealing with that. If people have any updated codes that works well to shut that down immediately, permanently, feel free to share. Number five, the next event I worked with, just me and my boss. We were setting up a punch fountain, but we're having difficulties figuring out how to get it to work. Frustrated, my boss lets her racism out and says, "This must have been written by an Indian, you know, being proper English and everything." The coordinator, who was also a white suspected racist, heard her but didn't say anything. Number 6, during the same event, I was directing people on where how to park, but a handful of them didn't want to follow my instructions and just did their own thing. I think white people and other people who think they're white don't want us to have any type of authority, even if it's just telling them where to park. Just inserting quickly, it's been my experience that everybody, as a result of the system of white supremacy racism, everybody is subjected to conditioning that you should not listen to, respect a black person who is, quote unquote, in a position of authority. I think we saw a lot of that for 8 years with President Obama. I don't care who this person is. I don't care what their title is. We're not supposed to listen to them. Carter G. Woodson in The Miseducation of the Negro, he even has a section talking about how black workers didn't even want to listen to black employees. That's not everybody, but that is a major problem in the system of white supremacy, something to be expected. Number 7. The next week, I was scheduled to bartend at a family reunion, but one of the servers, a suspected racist woman that I worked with before, called off. She didn't call a server to replace her, but a bartender to replace me. The first event that I worked with her, I ended up disclosing too much information about my last job and trips to Thailand. So the bartender that has been there for years ended up replacing me, and I replaced the server that called off. Mind you, this event was very simple as it only had beer and wine on the menu. I tried to get out of serving by saying I didn't have the proper shirt to serve, and she handed me her keys to get her extra shirt out of the car. I was not at all surprised. That same event, this is number 8, that same event, the bartender that replaced me was talking to the security guard about a fantasy video game. The bartender mentioned one of the characters was racist. Bored, I asked, "Oh, really? How so?" It turns out the character was racist because she didn't like animals. I just looked at her. Once the security guard saw I was unbothered by the comment, he looked at me, leaned in, and said, "Yeah, real racism," end quote. Again, I just looked at him, enjoying the snack I was eating. Number 9, the next event that I signed up for was bussing tables at an annual shooting range competition. All 300 guests arrive in full 1800s cowboy era attire. I know, scary, but I needed the money. When we got there, we had to go to each table and light candles. My hands were visibly shaking from nervousness. An old white man says to me, "So you're going to light my fire?" I think I would ring the cowbell there. Nervous and taken off guard, I laughed. Often I feel pressured to laugh with them. Later that night, we were rolling out the tables. My boss was standing 5 feet away with an older man and his wife. Again, I was being observed. The old white man makes a metaphor to my boss as to say I was rolling the tables out improperly or I wasn't doing it in a way that was working smart. I put the table down and say to him, "Pardon me?" He repeats the metaphor, and I still am not exactly sure what he meant, so I ask him to clarify. My boss then talks over the guy as he's speaking and tells me that I need to be lining the chairs in rows as I roll out the tables, which I was doing. Then my boss says, "You have to work smart." That's what he means. Clearly, she could see that I was doing exactly that, so I wasn't going to respond. I ignored them and walked away. Number 10, this time it was refreshing because I was working separate from this company for black women, but I still was serving with two suspected racist white women. I observed how they did almost everything together and stayed in close proximity to each other the entire time. When I was setting up glasses by the beverage table, they came over and were saying that the coordinator spelled lemonade wrong, which was false. They looked like they were having fun with the idea that a successful black wedding coordinator may have spelled something wrong. I stayed away from them for the rest of the night. Number 11, I arrived at a winery my next event. The suspected racist coordinator, a white woman, immediately says, "Oh, good, you're here. I'm going to put you right to work." I gave her a disapproving look, then reached my hand out. "Hi, my name is Ashley. I'm one of your servers." She then starts acting very nice. "Oh, thank you. I'm so glad you're here." Insert buckets of words. I politely cut her off. "I'm sorry. Where can I find the tables?" For getting right to work, let's get right to work. Number 12. After the event, we sat down at the bar and the owner offered us a glass of wine. All of a sudden, we started smelling cannabis. Dun, dun, dun. I noticed my boss look over at me, then at my coworker, then back at me. The owner of the venue, an Asian female, is behind the bar and says, "Oh, if you smell weed, that's me. Sorry, my weed is back here in a jar. Oops." And then the three of them laughed. At that point, I playfully shoved my boss and say, "Bridget, I saw that you thought it was me." She looked at my coworker and giggled. Please tell me how I can handle white people asking me, "Do you smell weed?" or looking at me when they announce the weed smell. Wow, since we have a question on that one, and that is one that I have never encountered in a workplace setting, and I don't think I've ever had someone ask me that in a workplace setting, a white person questioning another black employee saying, "Do you smell weed?" or even doing it in a manner that suggests that they think you either have cannabis on your possession or under the influence or maybe both. Yeah, if we have folks who have a codified response on how you would handle that codified response for that, certainly feel free to share, because that's one I do not think I've ever experienced or heard of or had anyone present with regards to a workplace setting dealing with that. She has three others. I'll pause just to allow participation from folks, and then I can read the last three. But if folks have any comments on what people have shared thus far, if you have your own situation, or if we have those wonderful folks who are not experiencing any trouble at all. Workplace is perfect. Whites do not assault, abuse, degrade you in any way, and you're compensated well. If you have suggestions on how others can get to that position, dial in 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, line should be open. Sorry. Line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
For the person who wrote in about white people suspectly asking about weed or marijuana, maintain the attitude and tell them right to their face, "I don't do drugs." And that's the only way I'll refer to anything. They would try to give a code name for something illegal and illicit. "I don't do drugs." That's the best name. That's the best attitude to maintain with them. Because even if they do partake, that's just something to besmudge your character and attempt to remove you from the workplace eventually. I'll mute my line.
Logical. Makes sense. I like that one. Great suggestion. If we have other folks that we have not heard from, if you have a hand up, the line should be open. Proceed. The other folks who dialed in with a hand. Oh, oops.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I fully agree with the statement that was said before. And I think that maintaining distance away from them is the best attitude to have. Also, it would kind of shed some light if they were on the phone, because you kind of need a little bit more clearer picture of the type of white people she's dealing with, because there's some that come in jest, where they'll joke with you and say something to you that almost they expect you to laugh at, almost like self-deprecating. And then there are other ones that are just very harsh and to the point that will just say anything disrespectful to you and expect you just to bite it. So it kind of need a little bit more to work with that. But if you're dealing with people that are constantly trying to throw racist jokes and remarks to you, it's best to kind of ease back, throw a little something at them, but nothing ever too harsh that would ever stick. And you don't want to get too much into that game. It's a very It's very dangerous water. Also, I would like to add, and thank you for picking up us also. I called about 2 weeks back in regards to an issue I had where I was being kind of put on as the quote-unquote player in my office. I don't know if you remember, but since then I took some of the advice that was given. I'd like to thank the people that called in and gave me some advice that day as well. And I actually approached my manager in regards to this, and my manager chuckled at me and said, "Don't worry about it. I wish I had a girl that would be there with me in the office." I smiled a little bit, but I didn't like go ahead and say like, "Yeah, that's what I want too." But it was a scenario where I know now the director, my manager, is actually aware of the situation, and he's not taking it. He's not taking their comments verbatim and assigning that kind of attitude towards me, which was helpful. So that's all I have to say, and I'll mute my line.
I'm just making sure I understood correctly. You said your coworker, I'm not sure if this is a manager or what this person's position is, but he said after questions had been raised about the comments they were making towards you, so, "Oh, look here, this is our player, and all that stuff." After questions were raised about that, his response was, "Don't worry about it. I wish I had a girl here in the office with me." Was that his response?
Yes, Gus. Pretty much. He didn't really have anything to say that was negative. I'd say he kind of was almost basically, and he elaborated. I didn't want to go into it too much, but he elaborated and basically stated that, like, you know, "Where are the girls? You got to bring them to me. Like, I wish I had girls here. These guys are with girls. I don't have any girls." Like, and this is my manager. So as soon as I heard that, I kind of was just like, okay, he has a different view on it. But I still kind of want to maintain the distance, and I've been doing that, and it actually has been working for me in the office. You know, I don't get the player comments anymore, and or anything of that nature. It's kind of just died down ever since I've had that conversation. So I've just been staying on code pretty much.
Spectacular. If the code being codified and just minimizing being around them for unnecessary reasons and frivolous conversation, if that's minimizing all of that, if that's helping to reduce this tackiness, great. They're just not talking to you as much, great. But even to have a manager say that, I mean, that is, to me, that just strikes me as being extraordinarily incorrect for the workplace. It could be an act of white supremacy. And I mean, that's talking as though you're some kind of a pimp and I'm supposed to be supplying like sex workers or what have you for people in the, I mean, what in the, and particularly in this environment, like, I'm a tad surprised that you would have that sort of just flagrant conversation with everything that's happening right now. But to me, I would just go back to the system of white supremacy, because I cannot imagine a white person making this sort of comment where you're being talked about as the office pimp. If I'm understanding, you know, player and all this other stuff, you're being talked about as though you're the office pimp. I cannot believe, or I just do not believe, I cannot imagine another white person being talked about that way, white man or white woman, where, yeah, that's just our little running joke. This is our office pimp, and he's just doing it up. Like, yeah, wish I had me a caravan. I mean, that is, I was going to say that's crazy. That is racism. And I mean, really, what person in a job setting wants to be thought of as a pimp? Like, I'm trying to get a promotion. I'm trying to be move up. I want to be thought of as management material. I am not a pimp. Like, I would, in my view, exactly. Something even should be raised about that in terms of a question. Like, what do you mean? Who has girl? What do you even, and just in the form of a question, what do you mean saying that you wish you had girls here? Who has girls here? What type of girls? Are you talking about a secretary? Are you talking about a prostitute? What are you talking about? Like, that is amazing.
I'm just working with it, doing the best I can and minding my business. That's pretty much it.
Wow. Did you ask anyone with the player thing? I know you said you took some of the suggestions, and I think we had a couple folks who thought it would be constructive to ask, what do you mean when you say player? Were you able to try that or not so much?
I got one response from one of the guys, and he was kind of like, he basically summed it up like, yeah, you know, you're the guy that, you know, you get all the girls, you know, all the girls, you know, they come to you, you know, all of them come your way. And I'm just like, what does that mean? He's like, you know, you get them, you know, and I'm just, and that's all they kept on reiterating. So I kind of was just like, all right, I have work to do. I can't be bothered with this. So I had to dip out. But again, since then, and since I've been asking them questions consistently, they tend to fall back and they keep it strictly business. You know, I would use the word reckless to describe most of the white males in the office. Everything is either sex or violence. That's it.
Mm.
You know, showing pictures and videos of women getting whatever put in them, and with animals, even bestiality videos, like just spreading it around the office within the team. And I'm just like, I don't want that. You know, I don't want to be in the room passing these things around. I'd rather be out doing my work and stay low key. I just want to fly under the radar, but I know that I can't. I'm one of the only black men, young black men in the office. All the other guys are older. So I have to bear that in mind, that I am still a big target, whether I like it or not.
Absolutely. Yes, that is very helpful, just knowing that information, that that's the sort of environment where they're just passing around all this, you know, perverted and pornographic material and deviance, sexual deviance, that this is just being passed around on a regular basis. If that's the sort of work environment, and I know it can be a difficult balancing act, particularly feeling like, oh, man, I don't want to make it seem like, you know, I'm stiff arming everyone and jeopardizing my job, and them saying, oh, you're just aloof, don't talk to us, and messing up our fun, passing around our picks and what have you. But man, I do not want any of this material. Like, whatever you all are doing, that's on you. But, you know, I do not want to be included in this. And I think I would have to tell them, like, I do not appreciate being referenced as a player. I know you all are joking, but I do not come in to be a pimp. Like, just everything about it just does not sound professional. We're all coming in and trying to work hard, support the company. That's not a part of my job description, and I just don't feel comfortable with it. I'd appreciate it if you all could discontinue referencing me as a player or anything about you get all the girls. It's not professional. Thank you. I would have to say something about that, because that is just not acceptable. Knowing all of the deviance that they're involved in, that's normalized for them. Understood. But, and even with all that passing around, I'd also be careful about being referenced as a player, because I could totally see if something does happen eventually where somebody gets in trouble and they end up trying to pull you into this. Like, oh yeah, we got our player down the hall and, you know, he's getting all the girls or whatever, whatever. I would just make that very clear. I'm not a part of any of this, the photos and any of this talk. And I do not want to be referenced as a player in this environment. And I'm sure some folks would say they disagree. You pick out whichever way you think is best to handle it. I don't know. Any folks have any thoughts on that? Just what they've heard? If you have your own situation you want to address, that's fine as well. But you have any thoughts on what we've heard? Sir, you have any how you'd like to be addressed, since you've called in a few times?
Octavius.
That's what we'll go with, Octavius. Any thoughts on Octavius's situation that he shared? Thank you for giving us the update, sir. Any thoughts?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir, Mr. Steele.
Awesome. Yeah, this is Ken Steele. I'm in Los Angeles at the moment. And, the previous caller, just out of curiosity, you mentioned that there's a great many older white males in the office setting. Are there any white females that work in your office setting at all?
Absolutely, but we tend to service them. Like, they're not as many. It's mainly a male-dominated company, but there are, you know, women that are in the office, mainly assistants, and they, you know, they play and jest, but they always keep a level of kind of professionalism. Most, mainly the older women. The younger women are a little bit more reckless, even when even they are with their conversations and dialogue.
Okay, because from my experience, anytime that sort of talk is going on in the office about a particular victim, and that victim is allowed to stay in the office, that is usually a situation where either one of your managers or a group of employees are going around and saying this about you, and it may be in reference to like a manager has a crush or something like that, or is infatuated and everything. So if you're hearing all of that, and then one manager is saying that you get all the girls, and you know, that says to me that they might be gossiping about you and saying all of this stuff about you and projecting their feelings about themselves onto you.
Exactly what you're saying. Basically, there were older women on the floor that I work with, and what's been happening is when they call me up to address issues that they may have, I go upstairs and address it. And from time to time, they get into dialogue with me. And it's mainly social issues. And these are older Black women. And they'll speak about exactly what we're speaking about now, about all these cases and how strange this is coming out. And, you know, the fact that it's white males. And, you know, that'll kind of be the end of the conversation. You know, nothing derogatory, nothing insane. But the younger women in the office, Black and white, they see that and they've actually asked me and they said, well, why do they talk to you so much? Why do they ask you so many questions? What possibly could you have to talk about with these women? Why can't you talk about that with us? That's exactly actually what has transpired, that did transpire in the office. I cannot deny that. So go ahead.
Yeah, can I make a suggestion about the workplace to you? I would study what Mike Pence has said about relating to women in public that you're not related to or married to or seeing. And that's the vice president. I think he takes a strict, you know, no private time and no private meetings with the opposite sex, even and limited contact with them in a professional capacity. I'm not saying, be cold or be dismissive or be any, take any sort of hostile action towards females in the workplace, but understand that they will use your connection that you have with them and your ease at speaking with them against you. They'll see that and they'll say, oh, he's a player. He can actually talk to women. This is a threat. And, you know, that could eventually lead to your termination. Just the fact, and you know, they may not be saying it publicly anymore because you put that out there, but they are definitely still observing you and all of the behaviors that you've exhibited that's led them to that. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing that you're talking to the ladies on the job, but I would definitely limit my conversation with them and limit how much private time I'm spending with them and try to keep everything as professional as possible while you're on that particular plantation. And then also, you made mention of a few instances that strike me as sexual harassment. By referring to you as some sort of player and talking about how you get all the girls and this, that, and the other, I would suspect that constitutes a hostile work environment. And also, if they're sharing bestiality videos and all sorts of very, very inappropriate material. I can understand you wanting to avoid it, but save every single bit of communication that you've been receiving that has included this really gross material. And if you have that saved along with your account of them, you know, referring to you as a player and whatnot, you would have a really strong case for sexual harassment or just, you know, harassment on the job. And I would definitely explore my options with employment attorney, because if they're talking like that about you on the job, your job is, I would consider my job at extremely high risk. And on top of that, if they're doing that to you on the job, then I don't think that's legal. And I think that you should refer to an employment attorney to find that out. At this time, I'll go ahead and mute my line. Thank you.
Appreciate that, Mr. Steele. If we had any other folks who had a hand up, if you had any thoughts or if you had a question, what have you, with Octavius's situation, certainly if you have your own incident you want to discuss, that's fine as well.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Octavius, I spoke early once, so if anybody else wants to comment first, I can let them go first. But this is in referral to Octavius and the young lady who wrote in referring to her, saying that she oftentimes feels the need to laugh with the suspect racist at her job. It's no different than how they're getting you to be okay with them calling you a player. They're giving you a designation. And the fear of not confronting that is what's causing even you to maybe laugh or take it in flattery in the beginning. But what they're doing is they're sexualizing you and objectifying you and getting you to think that it's kind of cool. You know, it's not funny to be sexualized by people who practice sexual terrorism and file sexual acts, that these dudes obviously are. And the only reason you're laughing with them or not confronting them immediately and seeing the seriousness of this designation they're trying to give you is because we're afraid. And we have to admit, we're afraid of these people. Why are we afraid? Because they control our social economic outcome, directly and indirectly. Once you admit that, then you start to weigh out the cost of what they put you through comparable to the little benefits you get from the job. So it's best to go into these situations immediately. Listen, I'm only going to be called by my name. That's just final for everybody. Even if it takes 20 times, let all 20 people know. Listen, I don't even want to deal with none with your sexual whatever games and play. Let them know immediately. And then, I mean, there's going to be consequences, but it's far greater. It's better for your mental state to stand your ground, declare some principles. Like Gus said, you got to say something, man. You just got to say something. And admit to yourself why you ain't been saying nothing. You're afraid, and that's cool. Ain't nothing wrong with being afraid of the system. But none of these individuals should make you afraid and not stand on your principles. I'll mute my line.
Racism, white supremacy is definitely frightening. Were you going to comment, Octavius?
Yeah, I am on both of the last two callers. I the tactics that Steele said were very much on point, and that's where I've been kind of gathering data and trying to make sure. Again, I keep my distance, and yes, the females in the office, I've been very aware of just the mentality, I mean, of what's going on. And I've been constantly just keeping my distance. I've been way too busy to engage people. And I've been trying to make sure that I maintain that. And for the second person that responded, yes, absolutely. I'm a single father, and my son, you know, I raise him by myself, and this is my main source of income. So for me, it's not even like I'm even thinking about myself in this aspect. And this is something that I guess that a lot of brothers and sisters go through, where they're just like, I got to go through this right now for my loved ones, for my offspring. But I also, go ahead.
I was just saying, true, you're right.
But that being said, I am trying to set a good example for my son as far as standing on his own too, and being a strong-willed man to be able to deal with these instances and confront them better than me. You know, so absolutely, yes, there's definitely a bit of fear there, because these older white men have been there for more than 10 years. So if they speak to certain people, there could be ramifications on that. And that's where I have to be very tactful in the way that I'm dealing with this. The only thing that is actually, not the only thing, but one of the benefits to the situation, is that my manager that I inferred to earlier is actually one of the newest people to the group. So he tends to defer to me for special projects, for doing certain work, like as far as getting anything special that comes up that a client may request, he'll come to me and ask me for that. And then he will in turn express his frustration with the other members that have been there longer and say, why are these guys not following my lead and doing as I say? And I don't comment. I just let him speak, you know, because at the end of the day, I'm not going to say anything bad about any of my coworkers, because I'm assuming that everybody's going to find out about it at one point or another. So again, I've been definitely taking my time in the situation, but because of my, my lifestyle, what I'm doing as a father is, it's, I have to be very careful not to, for lack of better expression, piss off the wrong person. I'll mute my line.
Context of white supremacy. Do we have the number again? 641-715-3640. Decode 564-943-pound. Press star 6.
Is that one. Eric?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? Yeah, I just wanted to comment. I had a situation at work. We had a little potluck, and I'm pretty sure I heard this, and what I heard was that everyone came together like for a prayer for like a potluck for Thanksgiving, and I'm pretty sure they went to the black person to say the prayer. And my issue with this is that it's a majority white work environment, so I just found it weird that they deferred to the black person to say the prayer. And I'm pretty sure it had to do with some kind of stereotype, black people being religious, Christian. And I suspect that there was some racism involved in that situation. And it just kind of rubbed me the wrong way, just hearing it. That's really all I have for that.
That doesn't surprise me. I think that sort of thing is typical, particularly with the holidays. I've seen that before, where environments that are like predominantly white, maybe they have black custodial staff at times, or, you know, black cooks, something of that nature. When the holidays come and it's time to have a choir, they'll get all black choir to come in and sing Silent Night, or they'll get, you know, a black minister to come in and, you know, pray about. Like, that is very, very stereotypical white supremacy culture, in my opinion. And again, that's, you know, about what you can expect. You can just add that to the list of reasons why, if you can avoid these type of situations, the potlucks and whatever other festivities they have, if they're doing any sort of gift exchange or what have you, if you're not mandated to go, I got other things to do. I got a lot of work. I'm behind a little bit. I got to catch up. I just got to miss out. Sorry. Hope it's great. If you got to go, just have that in mind before you get there, that it's very likely to be all sorts of racist, tacky antics at this event. I'm going to be prepared. I will not be surprised for anything that happens that's being said. If anything, I might have my recording device at the ready because I'm going to expect this sort of thing to happen. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, if you have commentary you want to share, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
This is Bender from Jacksonville. Since the last time I called in, it's been like numerous situations. Jacksonville's racism is like super overt, right in your face. And me as a vendor, you know, one particular store that I've been, that I'm a vendor in, the Circle K, the manager at that store. Whenever I go in, I speak as, you know, like just to show, you know, common courtesy as I go in the front door. And whenever I deal with this manager, you know, where nobody ever speaks back, that's expected. But whenever I deal with this manager, when she deals with me, I can't talk to her directly. I can say it to her, but she won't say it directly back to me. She'll tell somebody else to come and tell me whatever the answer is. Like in one situation, I was trying to tell her that she didn't have a particular item in her store, and I happened to have some on the truck, so I'll go and get it for her. When I explained that to her, she just replied, like, she said, "What?" And I was trying to explain it again, and she walked away while I was trying to explain it to her. And another lady came over to me. Her face is kind of like blushed. She kind of like blushed a little bit. She was like, she said, "You can go and get it off the truck." And I was like, all I could do was nod my head. And she was like, just go ahead. She's like that with everybody. And that's an observation I've had too, that whenever you deal with white people and you get in a position, and like one person is like mean to you, and you tell somebody else about it, they'll always say, they like that with everybody. They do me the same way. You know what I mean? It's like a code they all stick to. Every white person I talk to, or anybody I talk to that I work with, and I say that to them, she's like that with me too. I've dealt with that manager before. Yeah, she's like that with everybody. The talking point. And right now I'm dealing with a situation where it's a particular manager and Dollar General. She's calling my manager every day, telling her that I'm not doing certain things in my store. And I noticed that this didn't start happening until she asked me that question about NFL players kneeling. She just happened to one day when she was checking my product in, she just happened to ask me, "What do you think about those NFL players kneeling? You know, I spend hundreds of dollars on, you know, food and drinks and everything every year for the Super Bowl. So, you know, I'm not doing it no more. They're doing all this kneeling crap and all of that stuff." I went off cold. I shouldn't have replied. I said, I don't see a problem with it. Well, there's a meaning behind what they're doing. I didn't go into it. I just said, there's a meaning behind what they're doing. I don't have a problem with what they're doing. And ever since that situation, I could notice she kind of funny with me. And now she's just started now to where my supervisor has to come out to the store with me now to supervise while I'm in the store. And my supervisor's been talking to her. She's telling her certain things, but what she's telling my manager is not lining up to how the store looks. She's telling her I'm not doing certain things, but the store is looking right in place, immaculate. And there's nothing she can really say, but she took my manager back and, you know, private, and decided to have a conversation with her back there. I don't know what they talked about, but my manager just told me, whenever you, you know, vend this store, before you leave, take a picture and send it to me. So that's what I have to do at that particular store from now on. And that's all I'll put in for tonight. Thank you.
Wow. Appreciate that. Thank you for sharing. Florida, man, cows, lots of love down in Florida, right on. Number one, I appreciate the honesty. I think that's a real important aspect of counter-racism, being honest with ourselves and being honest when we make errors or we don't stick to our code. We talked about that before on the program, particularly within the context of whatever your work environment is. Times where we have a code, we have, you know, an understanding of racism, white supremacy, and, you know, what we're supposed to do, what we're not supposed to do in the work environment, but we don't follow through with our code. And why is that? What are some of the things that motivate us to not be on code? I guess what do you think it is that prompted you in that moment to say, hey, I'm going to share my thoughts. I'm going to give my view to this white woman on the anthem protests.
I think it more or less caught me off guard. You know, that was the last thing that I was expecting because, you know, when she checked me in, we don't usually have conversations, and it just, I guess it caught me off guard.
I know. That does happen in the workplace a lot. That's why I do try to recommend for all of us, and it's difficult. It's very difficult, but just as best you can to before you go into work to just take some time. I expect anything. I might come in and they might have a Klan robe on. Anything. Expect anything. And I'm going to at least take a few moments. Even if I am surprised, I'm going to take a few moments to think about how, you know, I want to respond or handle the situation. And I've said, I think a lot of times white people on the job, they'll make those type of statements just to elicit a response from us. What do you think about that, OJ? What do you think about that, Obama? Anything. What do you think about that, Trump? Anything, just to get to see what you're going to say, see how much you know, whatever it is, or they're just looking for an opportunity to abuse you. Sounds like the situation you said, whatever, about the players doing their thing, and this nigga. And then it's on from there. And I think that's great being observant. I think that's something as well. Just being able to note, like, wow, things changed significantly from this date. It seems like it might relate to this, the anthem thing. But real important, just recognizing the times that, you know, we don't follow through on our code and what happens. And I have heard from quite a few listeners who have developed their own counter-racist code. And it seems that when people don't stick to that code, sometimes things go awry. It seems often things go awry when we don't stick to the code. And also, I thought it was really important. You said when you went in, you spoke and the people didn't greet you. You said that's to be expected. I think that is super important. I think that's the way we should function with everything, but especially with greetings, because I've heard so many comments over the years about problems with greetings, either the white people don't speak or us not wanting to speak or just with all of that. In my view, the code, I acknowledge people. If I'm in an environment where I'm going to see a person every day, 5 days a week, you know, months on end, I at least will acknowledge that person if I'm seeing them for the first time today. That's not a, I don't think you're a racist. That's not, we're cool. That's not, we're friends. That just means workplace courtesies that I've said before. We occupy the same space on a regular occurrence at regular intervals. So I'm just acknowledging that I'm going to be seeing you. We have some sort of business arrangement, at least temporarily. No problem. That's not contingent on you speaking. I don't feel bad if you speak, don't speak. It's right on, whether you're courteous or not. And in fact, I expect a whole lot of people to be discourteous because we're in a system of racism, white supremacy. I know the disregard people have for black folks. Not surprised about that. Not angry about that. And I speak anyway. Right on. Keep it pushing and just go about doing work. I think that's the best, the logical way to function in a counter-racist manner. Other folk appreciate that for sure. Being honest. If other folks have comments or if you have questions about anything you've heard thus far, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Florida, once again, retired firefighter.
Greetings. What is this I heard about someone being accused of using marijuana? Did I hear that?
Yes. The black female, she wrote in and she said that I guess a non-white person, a non-white, non-black female had a container of cannabis in the vicinity. But before this was known and before she announced that this was hers and, you know, she had it stashed there, people could smell it. It was, I think, two white women. They could smell the cannabis and they were commenting and giggling. And then they asked the black person if they could smell the weed. And I think the way that she wrote it, it was asked or suggested that this might be hers and or she might be under the influence. That seemed like they had maybe been whispering and giggling, the two white women between them, that, oh, we think this black person is high. We think this black person has some weed on them, before the Asian female came out and said, oh, this is mine. My bad. Oh, and the person, question, there was a question asked. Thank you for reminding me. The question attached to all of that was, what to do if you're in a workplace setting and a white person asks you, do you have weed on you? You know, that sort of, have you consumed? Do you have weed on you? That sort of thing. How would you respond to that in a workplace setting?
Oh, well, my immediate question would be, is that policy for you to ask? That would be my immediate question. Is it policy for you to ask around the company, and who do you ask if you're supposed to ask, and why do you and what gives you the ability to discern on who to ask and who not to ask that question to? And I mean, that's what I would want to know immediately. Go ahead.
Sorry, I looked back at what she wrote specifically. The incident that I gave, the paraphrase that I had was correct, but the question specifically, she says, please tell me, how can I handle white people asking me, do you smell weed, looking at me when they announce that they smell the weed, as though she's the consumer, she has it on her possession. So that was her question. How do you handle white people asking, do you smell weed, or looking at her in a suspicious manner about all this if they smell it?
Yeah, well, because of the workplace, and especially because it's white people asking the question, I would either ignore the question or ask them, well, why is that policy that you supposed to ask me about? Do I smell weed? I don't even know what, I may just state, I don't know what marijuana smells like. And why are you asking me that? And I mean, unless the company is a marijuana sales business, you know, I mean, come on, you know, that's something that's totally irrelevant, should be anyway, of a non-white employee on a job to have to answer a question like that. I'm certain that policy in most jobs that I know about have a standard policy about what's considered to be illegal, if it's in a place where it's illegal, some sort of mind altering substances. There's a policy towards that, and whatever that policy is, we should as non-white employees should expect that policy to come into play. And I don't think that the question, do you smell weed, is one of the things in the handbook about the policy, whatever the policy is. I don't think that's in there anywhere, you know, as far as that concerned. And it should take that non-white employee to have that understanding. You know, I mean, everything that's asked may not be to your best interest to even answer, even make a reply to, let alone talking about, debating over it, that sort of thing, any type of discussion over it. You know, there's a policy towards that. Unless it was you, now you got a problem then. You know, you got a problem as far as that concerned. And I certainly would advise anyone to don't bring any alcohol or any type of substances like that to their job.
I mean, it's something that probably shouldn't need to be said, but then again, from my experiences of 27 and a half, 28 years on a job, people do make that tremendous error that are non-white on the job. Although I don't think this caller actually had anything to do with it, and that makes it even more of a point to, you know, that person shouldn't be having to answer the question. And that's what I have to say about that.
Great recommendations, and absolutely keep that in mind. Although I suspect your last suggestion about not having any sort of drugs on the job, with cannabis being legal in so many areas now, that is probably something that does need to be restated. Because that, I know I can say for Washington State, that, you know, has had such a huge impact, where I could easily see a lot of younger people not thinking that that's a big deal to, you know, have some cannabis on you while you go on the job. And even in areas where it's legal, I could still see where that could be a major, major problem, unnecessary problem, right, for a black person in a workplace. And even, yeah,
you know what, Gus, even if it is legal, I mean, alcohol in most places is legal, but you just have to be aware that, you know, you go into your workplace, you don't have any of that. Any of that in your car, in your desk, you know, you don't have any of that material around. Yeah, you may have to be cautious with some medications not to have at work, unless you have a medical paper stating that you have to take, you know, this particular pill at such a time. You know, I mean, you have to be aware of that. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
As far as my opinion. Yeah.
Also, I would think on the job, even in a state where it's legal, there's so many of them, and more to come in my view, that I do not think it would be to your advantage to be in a workplace, even in an area where it's legal, and have the whites think of you as the black person who consumes cannabis and brings it to work. I do not think that is going to be in your best interest. I think that'll probably be about on the same as the whites who are talking about and thinking of this one white black person as a pimp on the job or a player. It's getting pretty close, about the same thing. This is not someone that we're taking seriously in the workplace and thinking about, yeah, this is someone we want to promote and that sort of thing. This is, you know, talking about them like they're a pimp, a drug dealer, a drug user. You just don't want to be thought of by whites in the workplace in that sort of manner, as best you can help it. You certainly don't want to aid in that perception if you can help. Any other folks who had comments, suggestions? If we missed any folks, if you had a hand up, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Yeah, regarding the cannabis in the workplace, just don't. I don't care if you work for Smokey McSmoke Shop. I would never, ever, ever recommend anyone suggesting that they consume anything on the job or alluding to that. And if somebody asks you, hey, do you smell weed? I would immediately turn around and ask, do you smell weed? Like, where is it? Do you have it? Do you have some? That's one of the best responses that I've ever heard somebody give to the you know, who has weed, or, you know, I smell weed prompt. Is it yours? Like, do you have it? You know, and just play as dumb as possible. I've never seen weed. I don't know anything about weed. When you want to talk about weed in public, refer to, as an example of how to discuss it, refer to Ron Paul. I believe the former senator or congressman from Texas would go on long diatribes about how he's never seen weed, he's never touched weed, he may have smelled it once in college. You know, all of these sort of stories about how you've never even seen the plant. Even if you live in California or any of these other legalized states, I think having that line of nonsense at your disposal is very, 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 very effective at shutting down any sort of conversation about marijuana around you. And it's a really good way to present yourself. There's DGQ, but if you're going in and you're asking them, do you have the right to ask me about weed or something like that? That might cause a dispute. And then if you give a hard, I don't do drugs, that might, from my experience, arouse some sort of suspicion amongst suspected racists that, that's a hard denial and they may look at that as an admission of guilt. So I would just, take the I'm so aloof when it comes to weed. I don't even know what weed is. What does it look like? How many joints are in a bag? If you really want to underscore just how naive you are, and if you really feel compelled to talk to these suspected racists on the job, you can even start asking them about their experiences with marijuana. Like, do you smoke, or how much do you smoke? And if they admit to smoking, go ahead and make them feel weird about it. Just, how many joints do you smoke in a week? How high do you get? Like, where do you get your weed? All of those really intrusive, uncomfortable questions, you can go ahead and start flipping back on them. And that's how I would recommend discussing weed on the job. And take every accusation of marijuana and yourself as a threat. Just take that as a threat. Anyway, I will go ahead and mute my line. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Context of white supremacy. If we had any folks that we have not heard from, who had suggestions they wanted to share, if you had a hand up, should be with us.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
So I work for a company, but I'm the only employee in my city. I work in a co-working space. Co-working space being an office space that a lot of different businesses work in that are separate from one another. And the space provides offices, closed offices, Wi-Fi, even coffee, meeting rooms, just basic amenities. But you lease the office from this overall co-working space. They take your mail and everything. So so this question doesn't relate to my company per se, because I'm the only employee there, but it relates to the co-working space itself and some of the things I've observed. So the managers in the space are all white, non-black. And most of the black people that are in the building as a whole, patrons that occupy the co-working space, as well as the staff are not black, and the only black people are one of the security guards there and one of the cleaning staff. So I've gotten to know them, and one of the cleaning staff in the building, young black man. On several occasions, I've witnessed him getting verbally reprimanded by one of the white managers, and in what I perceive to be an aggressive manner. And it was out in the open. I was able to see it and hear it, and I imagine other people were as well. She was speaking over him pretty aggressively when he was trying to explain himself. And so that's happened on several occasions. The most recent time was right in the open common area with other cleaning staff and his colleagues who were not black, what I perceived to be Hispanic, so to speak. And she was really focused on reprimanding him. Now, I stay late at the co-working space, usually after everyone else has left, but this young man I'm speaking of is still there. I went to check in with him, and we talk in generally about things, but I want to check in and say, hey, I acknowledge that I saw that and you know, it seemed very aggressive. But I'm also being conscientious of overall that this is this young man's employment. So I'm not going to speak to anyone else about this in the building and mention this. But my question is, when I see something like that, and me being a patron of that space in this particular situation, and seeing one of the staff get mistreated, and I certainly believe that this was an act of racism, white supremacy. What can I do in this position on behalf, not on behalf, but just generally seeing something like this for myself, for this young man, for in possibly counteracting this situation?
Wow, that is a great question. Black self-respect, looking out for another black person being abused. This is such a unique situation, since you're kind of in this shared space. I think you, or at least one thing I think that you could do, we'll see if other folks have suggestions, but I think one thing you could do, Dr. Kanban, he talked about the power of writing letters, and he recommends handwriting these type of letters. I think you could probably handwrite a letter to whoever the highest person is at this company where this black person is being verbally berated, whoever the owner is, whoever the highest person at that company is. I would write them a letter, and I would write a letter to the person who is whoever you all are leasing the co-shared space from. I would write a letter to them. I would not mention racism, white supremacy in the letter, but I would say that I have seen a black employee who was working hard. The person was not being shiftless or smoking crack or anything like that. I mean, you can pick your example, but the person seemed to be doing their job and just was being talked to in an extremely disrespectful, crude, and totally unacceptable way. If you have to, you know, tell an employee what they're doing is incorrect, you can do that without being discourteous, rude, and loud, and just say that the way that she spoke to this employee should not be tolerated in an area where we're all supposed to be sharing this space and treating each other with some sort of dignity and respect, and that she flagrantly violated this person's dignity with the way that she spoke to him. I mean, you can write a really forcefully worded letter, since you don't have to answer that. I would write one to whoever the CEO or whomever is in charge of that organization, and then I would write another one to the person that you're sharing that space from, and see if that can, you know, get that sort of thing to spot. And I mean, I would emphasize, and I would even make sure to add, I've seen this person since you shared the space. I've seen this person. He is a hard worker. He's there every day. I would see if you can get the person's name, John or Bill or Ted or whatever it is. He's a hard worker. Mr. Roberts is a hard worker. He is here every day. I see him doing the best that he can. If he needs to be corrected, that can be done without this, you know, flagrant and vile display of yelling at someone. I would write a really, I would write a forcefully written letter to both of these individuals and see if that helps. Other folks have suggestions on how you might try to help this victim that's being abused in the shared space?
Yes, sir. I think I do.
Yes, sir.
You play it. You play excerpts from Mr. Fuller almost. Lately, I've noticed almost every time in the beginning of the program on workplace racism, and it sounds right in line with due process, which did the particular procedure go the way it should have went, and equal protection under the law, as far as that concerned, and never write a complaint, state that what you're writing, and don't make it long. That you're writing a report, that you're asking the company to investigate something that you observed, you know, something you observed. Now you made mention, I think I've heard it, you made mention the person's name who was abused, but you don't state who the other person is.
just make that observation that I noticed that employee so and so, under the Constitution, as far as under the Constitution is what I witnessed was a due process, and you're asking the company to investigate something that you observe. It sounds right in line with what Mr. Fuller is saying, and that's my suggestion towards that. And make it short as possible.
Can I be heard?
Thank you for that.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Greetings, everyone. One thing I would like to suggest also is whenever you're inquiring about such behavior, when you see someone being berated, I would use the terminology hostile. And the reason I say that is there are laws about creating hostile workplaces for individuals. And once that language has started to be used, then you are possibly on the way down a path of some sort of legal ramifications. If that's what it is, you don't necessarily say, hey, you are being hostile, but you can inquire if someone is speaking to them hostily. And if, you know, they begin to repeat that language, then, you know, I would make a memo, begin to write it down so that if this needs to be escalated or you need to hire a lawyer, then that specific type of language is present. That language has been used. That language has been admitted in description of the scenario that you are witnessing. And that's all I have to say.
Excellent. Excellent suggestion. Use the word hostile. Any other suggestions for black employee being verbally accosted in a shared work environment?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. I would. I definitely like the idea of writing letters. I would get in touch with the person that's in charge of the co-working space, and if possible, I'm not sure if this would qualify as against the law. I mean, like, I would just record anytime you see something like that. I would record it, and then I would send it to the management, or you know, you can send that to the media, and then, you know, list exactly where this took place, and you know, to use a metaphor, blow it up. But yeah, that's the sort of, if there's a black worker that's constantly being berated in public in a manner that is not like the manner with which the other workers are being addressed, then yeah, I would suggest that. Also, as sad as it may sound, in these environments, you have to remember that you're on a plantation, and the plantation is not designed for black people to feel comfortable or to be treated nicely. So you could, you know, that this victim could just understand that and be coping with it. And by going in and intervening, you may inadvertently put this victim at risk, or at greater risk than he would otherwise create for himself. Speaking of shared co-working spaces, you know, I've known about these co-working spaces for quite some time. I remember back when I graduated high school and went into college. Around that time, they used to be called incubators. They used to be these office spaces where you could rent out a small space for yourself, and you could find yourself working with similarly demographized members of the workforce. So I recently was doing a modeling gig for one of these shared co-working spaces. And we were taking, for this modeling job, we were just basically acting as though we were working in the in this shared workspace, and they were taking pictures of the different features of the different rooms and whatnot. And, you know, something was that struck me as really interesting on this modeling job that I had in this co-working space. All of the photos that involved, interactions between people of the different genders, they seemed very comfortable with two white people interacting with one another on camera. But they made, they were not comfortable with the black people being seen on camera together at all. In fact, there was one time the producer of the shoot, everybody just kind of freely sat where they wanted. And I remember this was a shoot that I wasn't in, but I noted that there were three black people sitting next to one another, and she came in and said, too much color. And then she proceeded to put white people in those in the spots. And then there were semi-intimate working scenes that they were shooting, you know, kind of a man and a woman working together but very closely, and you know, and in all of those shoots, all of them seemed to feature white males, and they had the non-white females posing with them. And I think that this was done very deliberately. And it's just something that, you know, when you, you know, I guess what I've been getting into this modeling thing, and you see how these stock photos are made and how these generic images are made. And yeah, there's literally a white person dictating how many black people you see on camera. It's oftentimes, yes, a white person dictating what it is that they're doing. And if you're seeing a lot of interracially, you know, tragic arrangements being, I guess, promoted as normal, that too comes from the mind of a suspected white supremacist. I'll go ahead and mute the line at this time.
Context.
Okay, can I speak on that?
Hold on 1 second. the caller at 2479. Did you have commentary for workplace racism?
Hi. Good evening, everybody. I'm calling from Ireland. My name is Madike. I'm from. Originally from Senegal, but I've been living here for 6 years. And I've been listening to this broadcast for 2 years now, which has helped me actually to start, you know, raising grievances in my company. I used to work for the biggest tech company, not to name it, and I used to experience exactly what the brother said on the call right now. And I actually won the case, not in court, because thing is, before the case arrived to the court, the matter was already settled. And I got paid, I think, 5 months salary. So I definitely favor that approach of writing a letter to the highest CEO, to the highest people, executive included, in case of, you know, when you notice something, act of racism, white supremacy, just write it down. Don't wait, document, and just send your email exactly as the advice suggested. The only other thing is that what I've been noticing also is that the Caucasian people know that we are not together. They know that they can always rely on some one of us to side with them. I didn't notice that with other communities, so-called Latino, so-called Arabs, so-called Jews, or Asian people. I noticed that with us. Every time you have a Caucasian recommending a brother or a sister, you're always going to have another brother or sister helping him in doing that.
Wow. What was your name again, sir?
My name is Madike.
Madike. Man, thank you so much for dialing in. Can you tell us what time it is in Ireland right now?
It's 2:45 here.
Wow.
2:45 a.m.
I definitely appreciate you hanging out with us for a little bit of your Friday morning to share. Again, global problem, system of racism, white supremacy, and that to me always stands out as significant. I always appreciate when we have people participating. I think Stacy is with us in London as well. Always appreciate when we have non-white people, black people in different parts of the world on the program, when you hear the same patterns in terms of things that white people do and how they terrorize us. Because for me, that just solidifies there's no such thing as a white person not being racist, because you just get more and more clarity about what it means to be white anywhere in the known universe. If we could ask, what could you give us an example of some of the things that they were doing to mistreat you at your tech company?
What they would do, basically, is minimize whatever you can do in your performance. If you have great achievement and great accomplishment, they're going to minimize it. If you close your account with big sales, you close many deals and the customers are happy, they're going to minimize it. They just basically going to say, oh, this was normal. This is your job. I think this is something, this is a quote that you definitely have to write down. This is your job. This is when they practice racism, white supremacy. Usually they use that statement. When you accomplish high achievement, you get answered, this is your job. So this was expectable. And on the other side, what they would do, if you make a mistake or if you make a so-called underperformance, they're going to maximize it. They're going to take the great picture there. They're going to point at you and say, oh, this is not acceptable. This is underperformance. We're going to put you under review. You know, I don't have a concrete example off the top of my head. But this is something that is applied across the globe and across any activities. I'm talking about tech companies. You can go to the restaurant. You can go to whatever you may think of. These are the same things that I'm hearing being experienced by our people.
Context of white supremacy, that is very familiar. I suspect we have some folks on the line in the States or elsewhere who can relate to that pattern. You do something great, it gets minimized. This is your job. You do something that's incorrect, that gets magnified. You are the worst horrible affirmative action hire in the universe. Have you figured out any code, a code with regards to racists using other victims, getting a black person to harm you or speak against you on the job? Have you figured out a code to try to minimize that, to keep it from where it's you being in conflict with another black person?
Sorry, can you repeat your question, Gus?
Yes, sir.
I didn't understand what
you talked before about how you said you began to understand that racists, they understand that black people, it's easy to get another black person to harm or mistreat a different black person. We're not quote unquote together. It's easy to have black people in conflict. So they'll just get another black person to work against you on the job. I said, the question I asked was, have you figured out a code to help minimize conflict with the other black people on the job, to work against them just being able to use another black person or another non-white person against you?
That's an interesting question. That's a very interesting question, but it is unfortunately difficult to do that on the job. I think that there are definitely brothers and sisters that would align with you, that would side with you. But there are other brothers and sisters with whom, unfortunately, you have nothing to, you can't do anything. Understand? So it's basically, it's back to education, back to the mindset of the brother or sister you have in front of you. If they have been educated with a Caucasian mindset, not to side with anything that is black, not to support anything that is African-oriented, you know, there's nothing, you cannot redo the education of somebody. So you are on your own. And that's the brother just said now about the plantation. That's not a metaphor. When you talk about plantation, this is definitely what it is. You are alone, same as you were alone in the plantation. So there's something I disagree with when you said about the fact that not mentioning anything about racism in your letter or discrimination or whatever. I think you have to make it clear. Definitely, you have to make it clear that what you have been noticing with the brother being reprimanded, it was definitely an act of racism. But not to get emotional, you can just quote, this was discriminatory in the sense that you have not noticed the same behavior with other people from another background. Because once you make it clear to them, they get shocked. This is not expected. This is not expectable from a black person working in a corporate company, in a corporate tech company, to react that way. You see, there are things that they expect from us, and there are other things that they don't expect from us. What they do expect from us is not to react, not to raise any concerns, not to write any letter, not to complain. What they do expect from us is just to keep our heads down and keep doing the job. Now, when you do things that the Caucasian don't expect from you to do, suddenly they get shocked. They're very scared. They don't know what to do. In my case, I was not writing letter. Instead, I was sending emails because it was easier for me to document them afterwards. So what I noticed that for every single email that I would send, there would be a meeting organized with the manager, senior manager, and team lead. So you would actually disrupt the time and the job of three people for every single, and that's the procedure here in Europe, for every single email that contains a complaint, they have to organize a meeting. I was sending 10 emails a day. I was sending every day 10 emails. Because this is a war. In the same way they use the tools as a manager, the tools to reprimand and to discipline you, you have to use the tools of communication to disrupt their job. So that's the only code. To answer your question, that's the only code that I would have. You are on your own. Your best friends is your communication and your emails. And if you have people brothers or sisters that have the same mindset as you have, if they have the same education, you can side with them, you can organize with them. However, if you don't have that, if you have brothers and sisters that have the Caucasian mindset, that don't have the same education, the same background as you have in terms of responding to racism and white supremacy, don't side with them under any circumstances. Don't organize anything with them, because it's just going to be worse. Yeah.
Context of white supremacy, global problem indeed. Wowee. If folks have any questions they'd like to ask, Mdike, am I saying pronouncing your name correctly? Mdike, is that?
Yeah, perfect. Mdike, yeah.
Awesome. If folks have a question they would like to ask, if you have your own comments you would like to share, feel free.
Yeah. Can I be heard?
I heard both of you. Hold on one second, Mr. Steele. The other caller, did you have a question that you were going to share?
Yes. I wanted to ask, what is the demographics in the brother's office? And does he find that in Europe that the white women are more oppressive? Or is it still the white males that show that oppression? Or is it more equal? I'll mute my line.
Thank you for your question. That's an interesting one. For what I have been experiencing here, it's definitely the white female, the white women, that are more oppressive, more racist, more, you know, engaging in that behavior of racism, white supremacy. You can see that on the job. You can see that at a supermarket. You can see that in when you take public transport. Definitely, I think the white female is in a position of you will never, as a black man or black woman, have more rights than I have always been fighting to have. So they would show you exactly that you are not welcome, and that whatever rights you can have, those rights will always be behind them and less important than their own rights. And you can, I think the first enemy of the white female is the black man. You know, so I think I've heard that here on that broadcast about you don't have to, well, you are encouraged to not to be loud. You are encouraged as a black man not to be masculine at all. Because that could scare the white woman. So basically, you know, they're being asked not to be natural, because they don't like our nature. Does that answer a question?
Did I answer your question, sir? I don't know if he might have muted himself.
Yes. Yes, it's Octavius. Yes, he definitely did. I appreciate that. And I appreciate the call, especially.
For sure. I don't know. Did you have a question, Mr. Steele, or you just had a comment you wanted to share?
It's a question and a comment. It's regarding the process with which Mdike was able to get a settlement from his employer.
Yeah. So you.
Can I ask her?
Oh, sure. Let's hear it. I thought you. Yeah, let's hear it.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I was just getting permission. But the question I have is, you know, the process with which you got your, you were able to challenge your employer, do they make you sign what they call an arbitration clause in Ireland?
I think I have that. We may call it in another way here in Europe, but I definitely signed a document which was called Gratia. It's a Latin name. I can't remember. Severance. I think it's a severance, settlement, termination, something like that. They made me sign something, definitely, not to go to court, basically. And we named that another, because my background, I have a legal background. So I know the wording exactly to use. I know the procedure. I know all the failures that they make. And I actually pushed them into those failures. Example, organizing a disciplinary without representative. You know, once you have the disciplinary, you are definitely entitled to have an appeal. They were not making any mention of that appeal, because all the HR representatives that work in those companies happen to be very far from the legal, from the normal legal background. They don't have any legal background. They make many mistakes. They don't know the procedures. They don't have time to know it. And believe it or not, you could have the biggest tech company, but only have one HR representative in it. So if I go back to what I said before about for every single email that you write, they have to organize a meeting. In those meetings, they have to invite the HR representative. So imagine the same person having to attend interviews, having to go to grievance meetings for every single email that you raise. So basically, what I'm saying is you have to drain them before they drain you.
Right.
And they're gonna end up now sit down with you and say, okay, this is disruptive. This is not something that we can sustain. So now what do you want? 5 months, 10 months salary, whatever you want. We can give it to you and just shake hands.
That's I guess the nature of a lot of these arbitration clauses. They're agreements, and I want all the victims that are listening to pay really close attention to how Madike handled his situation. He went through the process, and he discovered along going through the process that many people in the organization don't have a legal background and don't know exactly what all of the documents upon intake meant when they were signing them. They don't even know what the labor laws in the areas that they're operating in. They don't know all of the labor laws. So they could be behaving very recklessly in your favor if you go ahead and keep all of your documentation and force all of their communications to be documented. But the reason why I brought up the arbitration clause is because this is a document that an increasing number of employers are making employees sign, and this essentially forfeits the right to sue an employer in an open court. So here in the United States, what they'll do is they will make it so that any dispute that you have with them that's legal, any sort of labor dispute, has to be done through an arbiter. And this is a usually a former judge or some skilled attorney or some respected legal former legal entity that now operates on a private arbiter basis, where they hear cases and they act as a judge and they act as the final decision maker on a labor dispute. So the decision that an arbiter makes, it's not enforceable in a court of law, but rather if the decision is in your favor and they have to pay out and say they refuse to pay, then you can go ahead and take the case into open court, and all the proceedings will be public so that everybody can see what was written. Lawyers do not favor arbitration clauses. They prefer to go to trial to present their case in front of a jury, because most people on juries are going to be employees themselves and not employers, and oftentimes they bind in favor of employees against employers. And one of the disadvantages of an arbiter is that once the decision is made, that decision is final. Now, the advantage is that your lawyer, if they're good in your jurisdiction, they're going to have relationships with arbiters that are available in your state, and they're going to be able to make strong recommendations with which they're going to go forward with pursuing this case against a defense attorney, oftentimes who is the defense for the employer, who's oftentimes not the best in the area that you're operating in. They may even have holes in their knowledge and in their familiarity as well. So if you overwhelm them with the need to go ahead and pursue this sort of legal action, oftentimes you'll be an advantage because the arbitration was kind of set on your terms, and they don't want to go ahead and proceed with it. But when you go after them, and then they are able to, you know, take their time, mount up evidence, and plan, you're going to be at a significant disadvantage. So it always pays to escalate and escalate things on your behalf. Clearly state in your reports what the problems are, and see what they do about it. And as they're doing that, consult a local employment attorney, see what your options are, and oftentimes you're going to be in a situation where you signed an arbitration agreement, and you are going to want to be the proactive party and not wait for them to act on you. So I just wanted to bring up that arbitration clause. I didn't know how they do it in Ireland, but it sounds like they're setting up very similar situations to avoid going to court and to avoid having to answer to you in a public forum. Thank you.
And can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to add, if one is going to go about dealing with these issues at work, like the gentleman in Ireland, or if you are trying to build a case such as showing trends, just be consistent and be committed, because they're very opportunistic. They will try to show that, oh, well, you didn't catch this time, or well, where were you this day? And if you're just not consistent, that can be a problem. Also, in terms of recording on the job, make sure if you are in the U.S., if you're in the United States, make sure that you are in what is called a one-party consent state. If you are in a two-party consent state and you record somebody without their knowledge, that is considered illegal. If you are in a one-party consent state, that means that only one party has to be present with the recording device, and that party can be you. And that does mean with the recording device, so you can't put recording device in someone's office and then you're in a different part of the building. And the reason that I know this, and you don't have to believe me, you can check for yourself, but I have called a lawyer because I do this. I have a device that records 20 hours of audio, and it plugs directly into my computer, and it will automatically date and time each file. And I asked the lawyer, I asked the lawyer specifically if the workplace has a policy against recording devices, can that be an issue? And he said, it doesn't matter. As long as it's a one-party state, that law trumps whatever policy that they want to try to make up to make you uncomfortable. So just be aware of what the legalities are. And brother in Ireland, very thankful that you called in, and especially during hours that you could have been sleeping, because it just lets us victims be reaffirmed and assured that this is evidence of a global system. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Real quick.
Mr. Steele, the folks we have not heard from at all, the people we've not heard from at all, if you have commentary, lines should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Can I be heard? Or you can go ahead, ma'am.
You can go ahead.
I think he yielded the floor, Princess.
He would do that. I just want to... Good evening, everyone, by the way. I just want to give you guys a little bit of an update on my workplace situation. I have an East Indian guy who is my assistant store manager. And apparently, some other non-white, non-black individuals that are classified as Puerto Ricans are trying to retaliate against him because one of their own had was in a conversation with a customer, and we work in an area that has a lot of Caribbean, Latino population and stuff. So she was conversing with this customer in Spanish, and I guess for whatever reason it made him feel uncomfortable, and he walked up to her and told her that she wasn't allowed to speak Spanish on the floor. And so when my store manager had gotten transferred, one of the shift leads that I've had issues with in the past, well, since I've been there, he had made a comment about a black female that works there only part-time, a couple of days out of the month, because she's a dental hygienist in her full-time job. And so for whatever reason, you know, he made the comment about, you know, there's a new manager in town, and so all this crazy stuff that was going to be going on, you know, he's going to put an end to it and all this stuff. And he had made mention of her name and that she may no longer be with the company because, you know, working two times a month is not conducive to, you know, the store's budget and stuff. So, you know, she's going to be out of a job soon. Well, he and this other individual had concocted this version of the story because I was present. They are trying to pin it on the East Indian guy because he's already had some complaints from customers to corporate. And so now they're trying to spin it as this is something that he said against this individual. And when I tried to talk to the black females and tell her, you know, he's a jerk, yeah, but at the same time, he didn't say this because I was present when this particular thing was said. And for whatever reason, it's like everybody wants to go along with the story in order to try and retaliate against him to so that way they can go forward with the complaint to corporate. Because my former store manager was friends with all of these employees, and she's good friends with them outside of work. My actual store manager is encouraging them to contact corporate on this as a store manager just to get them fired.
So are you trying to, are you just asking for like suggestions to, I guess, intervene?
No, just, no. I'm just watching the mud being flung, but just showing how, I guess, non-constructive it is for whether it be black people to engage in it or other non-white people to engage in that type of nonsense. Because at the end of the day, store manager who is white, you know, he, you know, when they move in to someone, chances are he's going to probably look to get someone that looks like him. And the whole dynamic of the store is going to change because it's not going to be what they think it used to be. Basically, I'm just saying, like, all the infighting and stuff that seems to be going on now since the store manager, the black female, had left. So.
I think it was mentioned before, the plantation, it is not a metaphor. That is what we have in the system of white supremacy. That is another illustration. And you can expect that, unfortunately. The system of white supremacy creates that where you can just end up with all kinds of bickering amongst non-white people in the workplace. And sometimes the whites will just sit back and be entertained by all of this. And, you know, they might come and fire a whole lot of people. Just being aware, I think, MDK said that, and you go on the job, you're going to be on your own, and you can expect all sorts of abuse and mistreatment from lots of folks, whites and non-whites, and just having a code in terms of how you're going to handle, deal with that, try to avoid as much of it as you can. Princess is down in Florida. Our other caller who yielded the floor is also in Florida, all Sunshine State. Thank you for yielding, sir. If you had your commentary ready, proceed.
Yes, thank you, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I was thinking of a few incidents that occurred over the past couple of months when we had that Hurricane Irma. There was I don't know if it was on I-75, but there was a road that was flooded for a good couple of weeks. And there was a conversation that was being had when I walked past one department. And I guess, you know, they were talking about the developing updates about reopening a certain lane in this, on this road. I think it was Payne's Prairie or something like that. So, you know, she made this this statement about them opening it up, or, you know, taking a long time to open it back up. And she said, and I quote, "They're waiting for the bodies to wash up." And this is the same young white woman that said to me that we're going to incarcerate you. So yeah, that was her response to what another white woman said about, "I wonder what's taking so long." So yeah, she said the statement, "They're waiting for the bodies to wash up." Number two was before the Halloween day came. I think that was October 31st. Like, it was toward the end of the day, and this female, I think she's non-white. She says, she asked me, you know, what was I going to wear? I said, well, you know, I was just going to just wear my regular clothes. So she was saying, you know, said, man, do you have a tuxedo, you know? She asked me, do I have a tuxedo? I was like, nah, I ain't going to even do none of that. And then, you know, she was just, you know, brainstorming. Like, it was this one. And then she mentioned, like, Clark Kent, you know, superhero, like, you know, coming up with these two ideas. And it just seemed very sexual, you know, like in a fantasy way. So, you know, I said, nah, I'm gonna just leave that to y'all. So, you know, she was kind of blushing and all of that stuff. You know, but it was a real, I guess you can say, blatant forwarded type of sexual comment. Number three was, it was like I was, like I have to drive this Jeep, you know. And when I got back, the person that was in my designated spot was another, I guess, county vehicle. So I had to park the vehicle up the street in a 2-hour spot. So the one of the top powerful people, white people, you know, he was going to go find out whose spot it was, so, you know, I can get the spot back. And, you know, he let me know that the spot was free. So as he was telling me this, he says, oh, you know, next time, whenever that happens, you can just park behind it. So, see, then they won't be able to get out. And I, you know, I'm thinking, obviously, you know, what most people would say, he was joking around, but, you know, obviously that's an act of racism. And, you know, I said this to another white person, not that it was racist, but the statement he made to me, and she said, yeah, I recommend you don't do that. So, yeah, that was a very, very sneaky, clever or whatever. The next one was, I had made a metaphor of like when I go and pick up the recycling paper around the office. And the metaphor was about like a like a pot of gumbo or something. And like, you know, we had like the giant green bin. So, you know, everybody got to go dump their paper or whatever. So it was mainly black people around at the time, and it was some white people. So, you know, the sheets of paper, copy paper, is white. So they dump the, you know, the white paper into the green recycling bin. And, you know, the code word, the code name of the warden, the new white woman, she had asked if I could also get rid of some cardboard items. And, you know, these items are, you know, obviously they have color on it, color printed images and stuff. So, you know, I'm helping her to flatten the cardboard. And she, you know, she heard me talking about, she heard me talking about, you know, referring to the paper, putting the paper into the recycling bin as, you know, gumbo. So, you know, I was thinking about when you was talking about, you know, using analogies and metaphors. She said, says, yeah, you know, I'm adding color to the gumbo. Okay. And you know, the paper is white. All right. So these, other items, they have color on it. And, I said, yeah, you know, I can take cardboard as well. So, you know, she put the color, cardboard items in the recycling bin, and then, you know, I closed the bin and I went on about my business. But, you know, I thought about that statement, And she said she was adding color to it. So, you know, that could have been very racial. But, you know, as far as that, that is pretty much all of the incidents that I have. And thanks for allowing me to share.
Appreciate that. We are starting The Wisdom of Psychopaths tomorrow. New book for the book club. Kevin Dutton, white man in Europe, no less, who wrote the book. We've been talking about this book for about 5 years. Dr. Rassayan mentioned it about 2012 or so. But that statement that that white woman made about the when are they going to open the lane back up, the highway area back up. And she said, oh, they're waiting, you know, for the bodies to rise to the surface or whatever. Like, just that right there, that sort of, man, this is somebody working at a court facility. Like, this is supposed to be someone who has important duties. You got important paperwork and things that are happening for city government and what have you, state government maybe even. And that is the mentality. We just had a storm. The whole state of Florida was under state of emergency, unless I'm misinformed. So it doesn't even matter where you were, northern part, southern part, whatever. Whole state was under state of emergency with all these hurricanes. And this, oh, man, people, I don't know whether she thought the people died in the storm or if that was just an opportunity to go out and do some killing. But just that sort of mentality about life from someone who is supposed to be a respected city official in a government position. I mean, wow. Wisdom of Psychopaths tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. That's one you just log that away. Good to note about this individual. Great job. When anytime it gets in the tacky and sexual realm, I will be moving along. Thank you kindly. I'll leave all that to you all and put that in your workplace diary or your log document, what was said, time, date, people that were present, and keep it pushing. That's another one to know. Make sure I'm not caught in an office alone with you or anything like that. Keep that noted for the future. And always the metaphors. I want to be mindful of those in the workplace. We have folks. I know Mr. Steele had commentary. Did we miss anybody? Has anybody had a hand up that we didn't get to hear from at all? Did anybody that we've missed completely? The caller 5136. Did you have commentary?
Yes, this big victim, Birmingham, Alabama. I have a female victim on the line, but she doesn't want to talk. I would like to ask the victim, could you please explain how, when you first start listening to the cows and you're not codified, how do you go about changing your behavior once, you know, you listen to the cows and you know, like having white friends is not appropriate. And, you know, going to after hour parties with your white coworkers, how do you change from that behavior without them detecting you?
Interesting question.
She's on the line right now, but she just want to listen.
Okay. Greetings, the female caller as well. Greetings, Big Victim, Roll Tide. I don't know if you're an Auburn fan or whatever it is. This one, I guess I'll have to pass. So if we have listeners, if you want to answer that question about how you were able to change your behavior from listening to the program, particularly in the workplace context, how you changed your behavior. And I think she added, how were you able to do this without the white people detecting it? Was that the question? Or was that part of it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, I guess I will get my one statement in on that. That is not going to happen. That's something that I've said for a long time. If you have been on a job for any amount of time, you've been there for 6 months, you've been there a year or longer, and you have not been codified, you've just been frolicking with the white people, you all have cereal together, you all hang out after work together, you go to the bar and swap Christmas gifts and all that, and you're Facebook friends and everything. If you start being more codified, you stop doing all of that, you're not joking around, they are going to notice immediately. And they're probably going to be having some dialogues, chatting amongst themselves, other white workers, about your change in behavior. They'll ask, is it something wrong? Are you feeling okay? You don't seem like you're... Those will be the type of questions they'll ask. I've seen that repeatedly. If there's a change in your conduct, they are going to notice. White people are extremely observant and studious about their subjects, non-white people, victims of racism. There. Other folks want to respond to that question?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. In response to the question by big victim female co-listener, I'm going to have to concur with the host, Gus, and say that they are not going to... you're not going to be able to move undetected amongst them in their realm. One thing that was said to me that was very, very interesting. I was at an open mic in Studio City, and I said, I was just talking to one of my friends, and he asked me, you know, hey, Ken, do you ever dance? And I said, you know, I if I ever dance, I try to make it so that it's when white people aren't watching. And then a white person tapped me on the shoulder, and he said, Ken, we're always watching. And I'll never forget that. He, the person who said that to me, he was in his mid-50s, I believe. So it was even creepier to me, this person saying that. And yeah, they're always watching. So when you change your demeanor, that's going to set off what they call red flags. There will be dialogue about this. They're going to come at you nicely about it initially, but eventually it's going to be made more aware to you for the victim who's made the change. Going to be made more aware to them just how hostile the environment that they've been operating in, and to the victimizers, to the racists that are going to be inflicting this harm, they are going to, I suspect, become increasingly unrefined in their dealing with you, and their once they get past the, you know, are you feeling okay stage, they're going to get into a hypercritical mode where everything that you do is wrong, where every move that you make is incorrect, and everything that you do is grounds for termination. So if you have been behaving uncodified on the job, and that is how they expect you to continue to behave or to continue to function, and you opt not to, you may be putting yourself in a position where you may need to look for another employer. So just, you know, be advised if you're going to make any sort of radical changes in your behavior, in the way that you are responding to them, if you are, you know, kind of suddenly closed off or not responding to them, they're going to take note of that, and if they, you know, get past that period of asking if everything is okay, they're going to get nasty. So yeah, and just your white friends and everything like that. Once you start behaving codified, they'll let you know that they're not your friends, and they never were. And that's just something that you can expect. You won't have to try hard. Just, you know, start having dignity.
Do we actually have any folks here who can testify that they, after they started listening to the program and they started adjusting their behavior on the job and how that played out on their job? Do we have any folks who can testify directly to that?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
From beginning to listen to Kyle's, when I was in the workplace racism regularly when I was in Hollywood, California, and I changed my work behavior, but I found out that whites relate to one another at all of our former workplaces in ways that they know what to expect. Amos Wilson wrote that what white supremacists seek to perceive in us, gauge in us, is our complicitness with maintaining the system of white supremacy, racism, domination, and mistreatment based on color. So all the things that this young lady was doing, engaging what Gus called frolicking with the whites, those things are confirmations to them that you are on board, that you are totally fine with the system of white supremacy, racism. You will not acknowledge the race war against you, and you will take whatsoever manner of abuse as long as they give you comforts of so-called friendship and smiles and trinkets and a drink or whatever. But when you immediately stop doing one thing, stop having sex with them or stop letting them touch you, hugging them and shaking their sweaty hands and shit, and you give them the fist bump, they immediately, they look at it, and they should. White supremacists look at it as hostility. That's why they immediately become alarmed and ask questions like, is something wrong? Because something's wrong. Something is wrong. And you have to face that. You're going to be beefing with these people, some of them openly, because they're not going to be happy that you flinching under the whip now. They're not going to be happy that you trying to run off. Nigga, you trying to think for yourself. So you're going to have to be up front, young lady. Quit hiding your face, admit you're scared, and go ahead and deal with these folks. And just flat out, again, you're going to have to declare a code. Yeah, I don't do that no more. I don't think hugging is good. Workplace or not, yeah, I'm not hugging. Yeah, I really don't feel like talking about this or that. You're just going to have to be direct. There's no such thing as that matrix shit that you can hide out and then they just every now and then find you somewhere and attack. No.
G-rated.
They know immediately. Oh, I'm sorry, bro. They know immediately when you are thinking about running off the plantation. They know immediately when you ain't cool with the whippings, the psychological abuse, the terrorism, and the, what they call microaggression. They know. So go ahead and dig in. Commit. You're going to have to commit every day that you are about justice, seeing that no one is mistreated, and you're about self-respect. And that's just what it's going to be.
Also, I don't mean to cut you off, victim, but she's been found guilty of talking politics with her boss. I told her about it, but we're in a relationship and we kind of play with each other, but I tell her that when it comes down to this, when I listen to the cows, I'm serious business. You know, I don't be playing with you, think it's a joke, but it's for real. She hasn't grasped her mind around it. She still thinks, you know, racism is the KKK with hoods on and the skinheads. I said, it runs deeper than that. I'm talking about regular non-black people that they'll be nice to you. They'll give you trinkets, but they'll go out with you. But at the end of the day, when things go down, they for white supremacy. And I'll be trying to explain that to them.
Keep showing her who in power, not only just on a national or global scale, but just ask her questions like, if we are afraid at work to say the wrong thing to these average white people we know, are we scared of them? Are we scared of the power that they wield when they come together? Whether it's a decision about us at work or a decision about us being pulled over or a decision about how they're going to treat us at the bank. When they corroborate together, the power is what is the real deal that shows the system of white supremacy, racism. We have to want to neutralize that, not just see it. You dig what I'm saying? She got to want to say, damn, this ain't right. And G-rated. Feel like on some level, okay, she got to feel like on some level, she wants justice. Wants to have more balance and not be mistreated in this power relationship with these people. I'm keeping my line.
I just have one.
Can
quick...
I say something?
Yes, ma'am. I just want to get in one quick question. You said she was found guilty of talking politics on the job. Did she get like in trouble, or is that just your, you know, vernacular?
Well, I'm sorry, I was talking in metaphor. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's no apology. I was just trying to. I mean, but it is serious. I was just trying to understand. Wow, that is serious. But yeah, I do encourage that. We talked about that before. I remember.
Can I say something?
Yes, ma'am. If you could give me 1 second. I remember when she called in previously, and that was one of the things that was talked about, not talking about politics on the job. And I think that's been, at least for this program today, that has been a pattern. Got to be consistent with it, that making sure that we are serious on the job and just not making random statements, given our views on the world and politics and Donald Trump or the anthem protests, like that is not going to help your work situation if you are a Black person. I have never seen where that has improved things for a Black person, male, female, child, none of the above. Yes, ma'am. Proceed.
All right. He's telling his version of that, but he knows that I am not, you know, wanting to get into this situation with them. I am very much wanting to, you know, not be a part of this situation, not being a white person a Black person with white people. I don't. But like I told you before, that I've been at this job for 12 years and, you know, at first, because I didn't know, you know, I started, you know, doing some things. And what he's saying is that some tickets were bought to go to a concert, and I wanted to say no to it, but they were already bought, and they was, you know, paid a good penny for them. And so I said, I'll go. And he kept telling me not to go, and I shouldn't have, because not long after that, a situation happened just yesterday at the job that really just got out of hand. And, you know, my question.
Are you still with us? Hello? Sounds like you got cut off you got cut off right about the point where you say sound like you were going to say my question and it cut out. I don't know if you got disconnected or.
Hello?
Yes, sir. We cannot hear.
She got cut off.
Oh, okay. Do you have to dial her back? Is that how it's set up?
Yeah. I'll come back on when I get a guess.
Okay. We'll get Emmy in the meantime. If you that is serious line still one that she's been found guilty of talking politics on the job. Emmy, did you have commentary you were going to add?
Greetings. Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Unfortunately, I dropped off at the beginning of the lively discussion between the previous two callers, so I really don't know what they were talking about. I wish I did so I could comment, but I wanted to comment on a couple of things that I heard earlier. For the female who wrote in, if I'm not mistaken, I think she said that she lost that job, correct, Gus, or am I mistaken? That was all the same post, correct?
Right. I think at the very beginning, she said that she quit.
Okay, that she quit. And I think due to maybe she was found out on her activist page, and it had me thinking for a while I was like listening to some of the other folks speaking that, and I've said this before, and I think it's very healthy for Black people to have something else that defines them or have an ultimate goal or something else that we're doing. And it's not a career that we're chasing. We don't get to, we're not afforded that same luxury as white people to just kind of be a little bit, and maybe they're not even afforded it because they're constantly making sure that they maintain their system of white supremacy. But the idea that, you know, we just can work and build our families and live and die happy and all that kind of stuff, that, I mean, there is a whole other conversation that we are having, which is how do we fix the problem? So should you be having that conversation or be asking yourself that question so that you could come up with how you intend to solve the problem, then, and I'm saying this because the female said that she had like an activist page. And if that's the case, then, you know, you're not defining yourself as a bartender. You have something else that you are attempting to do. should you have something else that you're attempting to do, then I think it makes it a little bit easier to be codified. That's been my experience. It's, I think, harder to be codified when who you are, when you define yourself by how you make your money or your job, because that means that you want to show up as you are at your job. And I think that that is a naive perspective. And I think that, or evidence, there's enough evidence to suggest that believing that you can be yourself, especially if you're tuning into a broadcast like The Cows at your place of employment, is naive and can get you in trouble. So if that's the case, then I don't think that there's anything wrong with knowing that who you are, again, is not how you make your money. So creating a way of being, even if it's not from the jump, I don't think that it's that, I'm sure I'm speaking from a perspective where I've made multiple changes in a quick, short amount of time. So I've been able to apply my codification in new environments, although I've made several mistakes along the way, things that I would not do again, things that I would do better. But at the same time, even I could see being able to create a persona, you know, not develop some type of like split consciousness or nothing where you develop another personality or whatever. But like, as I described, I think in the last time that I spoke, like a mask, this is who I am in this environment. This is how I am. And I think that that's part of codification. And if that's the case, then I'm not so sure. And VGQ to me, I'm calling it for me. Sometimes I know that, you know, there's a lot of, well, you know, style up on this and do that and do this and do that. And sometimes I'm not so sure, like, if you have a real career, like you went to school, you invested a bunch of time and money and whatnot, you have this job, and this could potentially ruin all that you've invested, that you've built, then by all means, I think definitely pursue. But I think in some situations, a job is just a job. And maybe not all of that is warranted. And your energies, because they are limited, could be used better differently. And if that's the case, like, for instance, I think someone mentioned, like, they laugh. I think it might have been the female who wrote in. She said she laughed because they laugh. That's one perspective, absolutely. But a complete, you could, the same expressed behavior could come from a different perspective. I laugh, but I'm completely aware that I'm laughing to make sure that I can kind of maneuver in this situation. It's like, it's a change within, but it's when you have a different persona. This ain't really who I am. I'm just doing this because this is where I'm at. I'm about to make this money so I could go make sure I can do my activist page and whatever else it is that I'm doing. This is who I am. When I'm here, that's who I really, really am. You know what I'm saying? And I hope that makes sense. And I think that that's like a different way of maybe viewing codification. It works for me. Again, I have made some mistakes, but it's also because I'm really, like, I have admitted in the last call that I do have some fear and whatnot. It's particularly, I'm the one that's like, who's doing a TA with the math professor. But to even engage in all of that and pursue that and confront her and have that conversation, like, look, time is limited. My resources are limited. Let's do this, wrap it up and go. Cause I got other things I want to do. So I got to pick and choose where my energy is going to go. I think another thing is we get to own up some of whatever it is that we're doing that causes certain situations. I was kind of curious, like, well, I mean, it doesn't mean that you would have to do anything to have white people say certain things or make certain stereotypes about you. You don't have to. Just by being black, they could come up with all kinds of stuff in the left field that doesn't have anything to do with anything. But for instance, if I'll be transparent, like I don't dress up, but I like to look, to feel confident in what I'm wearing. Like, and I like to wear whatever it is that I wear. Let me put it like that. So if I acted like, well, I don't know why this white female is throwing me shade, that would be me acting like I don't know what I'm doing that's causing that. And I don't think that that's correct. I think, you know, so with the black male that was talking about people call him a player or whatever, I think the conversation might have been brought up, but I think at some point I might have missed it. And it could just be because I'm really exhausted. I'm like 30 days straight without a day off. So forgive me if I'm not like super on point. But you know, yeah, I think Mr. Steele might have mentioned it, you know, just We don't let him. Like, don't deal with the females at all. I know that's, you know, like, just, you know, because perhaps even them just flocking to you, I don't know, what, are you, like, tall and handsome or something like that? And, you know, I don't know, but we can't be, act like, well, I don't know, it's just because I showed up and they're just saying these things about me. There might be something there. And so I'm not saying it's not racism, but I'm saying that, you know, I could wear a burqa and these women probably wouldn't throw me shade, right? They might perform their racism some other way, but I'm just saying that there's something there. So I could be incorrect, and if I am, forgive me, don't attack me. And I think I was trying to remember some of the other folks that, like, might have commented or said something, but, oh, so I guess I'll just fill you all in. So I managed to not have to grade for a little bit, but she did it again, gave me a key. And I'm going to do exactly what I did before, because at this point, it really doesn't matter to me. I'm so close to the end of the semester that, oh, that's what it is. I'm glad I kept talking, so it came to me. Scratch that. Screw her. I'm not really tripping. She's not no more a suspect. She's a racist white supremacist female. She got all her insecurities and all that stuff, and I have to deal with it Monday through Friday. But I took off one day, and I'm just like, I was like, I'm not coming in. And it's just because I needed the morning. I wanted to go to the gym, and I didn't feel like balling down 95 at 85 miles an hour. So I was just like, I'm not coming. So sent her an email, and that was that. And for me, it was great. I don't really feel the need to engage her in any other kind of conversation. I consider myself I'm attempting to be a counter-racist scientist. So I just observe. Does it make me uncomfortable? Yes. Do I not like it? No. Does it give me stress? Yes. But I feel like even engaging in all of that would give me the exact same thing. So this way I observe, and for me, it works. I'm very clear of who I am in that environment and who I actually am. I'm just talking to y'all right now. So I was in biolab, and so here's a new codification that I'm developing. I had it before, but maybe I slipped up. I don't know. Maybe I was, like, filling myself or something because I was getting it. And, you know, we were doing an experiment and observing these particular shrimp under this microscope to look at their, like, circulation and whatnot. And I kept noticing that the reason we weren't able to really focus, it was me and these two other white male and a white female. And I was like, y'all, he's tripping. Like, he don't want to stay in the frame of the microscope because the light's too bright. So y'all, you know, we should turn the light down. Everyone was just ignoring me. Like, I was just talking out, like, everything I would say. It was like, no, it's the lowest it could go. And then I was like, okay, whatever, look. So then the white guy comes in and, you know, is playing with the microscope. And he's like, well, I'm going to just turn the light off. And then it was like everyone completely forgot that I said the reason the shrimp was moving and not letting us get focused was because the light was too much. And then the white female was like, that was a great idea to turn the light off. And I was sitting there like, the hell is going on here? But, you know, I had to check myself, and I brought myself back, and I said, well, this is what it is. This ain't the first time. There's been a couple other times that I've had to work with them, and I'm just like, y'all are idiots, and y'all are benefiting off of me. So my new code from here on out is I don't have nothing to say. If I'm going to do it, like, for instance, I didn't have to say nothing. I could have just turned the light off. That was me being smaller than I am. Like, why am I even telling y'all what I'm about to do? It's me and the shrimp and the microscope. I could have just turned the light off and done what I was going to do and not running by y'all. So that's me. And that's what it's about to be. Like, I'm going to just do it. I don't need anybody's permission. And if I know they're making a mistake, I don't have to fix that. Like, get it wrong. I don't care. You know, so I think that might be all I have to say because I've talked for a long time anyway. So I thank you all for listening.
Appreciate that, Emmy. That sounds like not helping white people. If you're in that sort of group setting and they're making errors that are not going to impact your grade, right on. That's on you. Big Victim, did you make it back with your fellow companion? Let's see. All right. Are you there with us, Big Victim?
Yeah, she's on the line.
Okay.
You guys, I'm sorry. My phone went dead. Didn't know where my charger was. But anyway, I'm not sure where I left off, but
my
I do want
was,
y'all to know that I'm...
That was where it got cut out. You said, it sounded like you were going to say, my question was, you had explained about the concert and all of that and... yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It sounded like you were going to say my question was.
I,
I guess I should say that my question is, why is it? And I've been asking him, and I think I asked you the last time, why is it that I couldn't say to them, you know, like yesterday, I'm going to just say this right quick, a situation happened where there was a mistake made in the office, and, you know, I was telling them, you know, what happened, and it was almost just like the young lady just was talking about. They want to make you look like you don't know what you're talking about, you know, but like I said, I pretty much know that office. I know everything about, you know, what I'm doing, and they try to belittle you and make you think that you don't know, you know, and I'm having to explain to them what happened. And it's like my coworker, who's the white person, you know, is like they don't say anything to her. You know, she starts off the job, but mine is the ending. And so everything falls back on me. When if she does something wrong, then at the end it's going to come out that it's my fault because I have to be the one to end this job, you know, what I do. And so, you know, he was saying that he wanted, you know, from the front end that it'd be all right. But still, even when he's talking to her, he's looking at me and making it like it's my fault that I'm the one that got it wrong. And I'm like, you know, and I really want you to just stop. So my question is, why is it that I just can't be mad? Why can't I be mad about this and tell you that, no, it's not like this. You know it's not like this. Why is it that seems like that I'm just, you know, being quiet, that I got to be quiet about this and, you know, not tell them? I mean, make me understand that. I mean, am I wrong for thinking that I shouldn't be like this?
Racism, white supremacy.
That would be a good answer if you needed the details. I mean, that's all of us. That's why I use the term victim on this program. We have all, every single one of us, been victimized. And a part of that victimization is our conduct when we're in the presence of racist man, racist woman, racist child. I think the caller, one, another pattern, major theme for the broadcast this evening in terms of, hey, it is fearful being in these workplace situations, and this white woman, this white man, they could decide whether or not I get my paycheck or whether I get my direct deposit or whatever it is. That could have a huge impact on whether or not I'm able to pay my mortgage, pay my car note or whatever, take care of my children. I think that was the first thing that was mentioned on the program this evening. I had offspring that I got to take care of. You know, if I upset them, if I talk back to them, they could, oh, you're out of here. You know, not going to take any lip from you. Get out of here. I suspect most of us, directly, indirectly, that's the way that we're going to work. And that has a huge impact on how we function in those settings. If that was not the case, you probably would behave extremely differently in terms of everything. When you spoke with us before and some of the abuse and mistreatment that you mentioned. But white people have a lot of power in the system of white supremacy. They have more power than we do. And that has a huge impact on how we function. And I think it just becomes recognizing that fear. And then understanding that and then acknowledging, hey, I'm going to be truthful. They do have more power with myself. Still, what's happening is incorrect. And I can have some self-respect and figure out ways to address some of these issues. Or I can just say that I'm afraid for right now. And I'll just have to accept this until I say, hey, I'm not going to take this anymore and start working to get the courage to address these problems. To me, logically, that's the only way you can deal with it. But I would not beat up on yourself. Don't get angry with yourself. Be patient with yourself. And just understand this is the system of white supremacy. And every single one of us, I'm sure big victim included, and myself, we have all been in that position. You get stopped by the police. Am I going to talk back right now? Am I going to yell at them and curse them out if they're being rude to me? That's the system of white supremacy. White people have a lot of power, and that has a huge impact on how we respond.
All right.
Just keep working at it. We had other people who talked about some of the errors they made where they didn't stick with their code. Just keep working with it. Be patient and be thinking when you go into work, because it might take some time just changing, because you're talking about changing the way you think and changing the way that you behave. That's something that you have to be conscious of. Like, you have to be thinking on a regular basis. I'm going into work today. If they're not calling me by my name, I'm going to say something about that. If they're asking me to come out for drinks or whatever, go to the movies, whatever it is, I'm going to decline. Even if the tickets have already been purchased, I'm going to decline. I'm not going to be talking about politics or volunteering my thoughts on, you know, whatever the issue is. Don't know anything about that, or you just figure out in advance what you want to say. I don't know anything about that. I haven't been following it. I don't discuss politics. I think that's Emmy's line. Pick whatever you want to say and just think about it. I encourage even listeners, if you can get to work 10, 15 minutes early, you can just sit in your vehicle by yourself and just calmly. You can call it meditation or just sitting quietly, whatever it is, and just think. If they, you know, bring this up, this is what I'll say. If this sort of situation happens, this is what I'll say. Where you can just calm your mind. That way you're not surprised, because a lot of people have said that they end up being shocked or surprised when these sort of things happen in the workplace. They ask you about the tickets, and that might be an out of the blue thing, them asking you to go to this concert. And so you just kind of go along with it because you weren't really prepared on how to respond. If you can just take that time, think before you go to work, and even take some time and think in the moment. If they ask you, don't feel compelled that you have to respond right then. If you just want to take a moment, calm your mind. I'm changing the way I think. I'm changing the way I behave. Thank you so much, Ted, but I got something to do. Really, you don't have to be nasty about it. Just real. You can. A lot of it is can be very, very simple. Just thinking out and doing logical things. That's the way that we can handle a lot of the problems of how we respond on the job. We have about two. One. Did that make sense, ma'am? What I just said? Was I talking crazy? Did that make sense?
No, it makes sense. Okay. I understand, and thank you so very much.
For sure, for sure. Any final comments?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, real quick.
Hi, this is Princess. I did want to make note that one of my things that I can still struggle with, and I think you guys had heard a bit of it a few weeks ago, was fighting the urge from just snapping, you know, trying to keep from allowing white people to push you to that breaking point, because they know how to do things to try and get a rise out of black people. Whether you're codified or not, they're very good at it, because they're dedicated at what they're supposed to do in the system. So I think that's one of my ongoing struggles with what I know now.
That's a whole lot of us we're working with. I think we had some examples today with that, where they will do that sort of thing on the job just to provoke a response or a reaction. They are very shrewd about that sort of thing. And again, I think just being prepared, understanding what it means to be white, focusing on that, being serious when we go into work that, hey, I'm going to be around racist man, racist woman for the next 9 hours or 10 hours or whatever your work schedule is. And just being prepared. I'm not going to be surprised. Even if they do surprise me, I'm going to take a few seconds to gain my composure and figure out what the best way to respond is in a counter-racist manner. And getting upset, just what chimp out, as they call it, just responding emotionally where they get you angry about something or get you excited about something. Most of the time, they can handle that really well. When we're calm, strategic, logical, they do have more problems. It's been my experience, a lot more problems dealing with it. And sometimes just asking questions, man. We have done our full three for Workplace Racism. We'll be here tomorrow for the book club, Wisdom of Psychopaths. I am so excited to read that book. Dr. Rossian highly, highly recommended that book like 5 years ago, and we just lollygagged about getting to it, but the time is now. Wisdom of Psychopaths, Kevin Dutton. He is a white man, racist suspect. He teaches at a university in Europe. He has done a lot of videos. It's a very popular book. He even did a TED Talk about this book, and he even has little follow-ups to this book as well. It came out, I think, in 2012, but that's tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. The compensatory call-in is this Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and the Global Sunday Talk on Racism this Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central, 12 noon Pacific. That's it. Thanks for everyone all over the world who chimed in, participated in the broadcast. I hope it was a constructive investment of your time and energy this evening, dash this morning. And if you have other questions, comments, suggestions, drop an email and we will share on the air. That's it. Sobriety would be best. Racists have done a lot of damage with their poisons, chemicals, alcohol, cigarettes, you name it. It would be in our best interest to preserve our brain computer so we can crank out solutions to the problem, white people. If you're going to be in a vehicle, driver or passenger, buckle up. Certainly you want to be sober, but buckle up. Let's do everything we can to minimize contact with race soldiers. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.